Blog Talk Radio.
Shy one horse.
You brought too many.
show number 1,500. Welcome. As we bring you into the Hump Day special, where the brothers and sisters get down and lay it out. But only we can tell it, because only we have felt it. Good evening and welcome. Soul Tree Radio with a Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the members of the Brother Man Network and the Black Athlete Sports Network, dedicated to doing the do with the who, what, when, where, why, and sometimes how of sports journalism, making secret cows into ice cream for over 9 years. For further information, contact us at www.basnnewsroom.com. So shout out to members of the Brother Man and Sister Gal Network. I want to say thank you, because in March of 2012, we were first on the air with our own show of this format in the States, and we've just grinded along. Many people to thank, many people to embrace, and welcome not only their thought of mine, how they thought, how they ran things down, and how they were able to critically think and break through the ground that will allow us to expand to where we are now. Among those people, Radio Reggie coming out of Richmond, Virginia, Vicki Hampton Sr., who we were blessed to talk to yesterday at a Detroit city. Shout out to Ricky, Tim, and Mike from the African American Athlete Show. Thank you for all you do. Sonic Cheryl Jones, giving you a big hug, sweetie, as I know you're recuperating. Love you. And Pat Freeman, the mighty Oba, doing Oba things and doing well in the world. Of course, my brother's here. Big G, Big T, the big line, serving up, scoring with all things having to do with information and objectively looking out for black athletes everywhere. Having said that, I have the other members of the MIG line with me. Tony and Big G, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Oh, by the way, license and registration, please.
Well, before I go any further,
Sister 1500, I want to make sure that, you know, everything's in order, you know.
Yes, sir.
I might go ahead and tell you I want to congratulate y'all on your 15th episode.
Oh, no, congratulate Mike. I've got nothing to do with this.
Oh, I beg to differ. I have so much to be thankful for, and especially you too, Tony. From the time we were kicking about hockey trivia, we had a connection. You've been a great friend and a brother and family, and I love and appreciate you. Gary?
Wow, he read it exactly the way I wrote it. That's wonderful.
Gary, you are an unbelievable human being. I am always amazed by your moral strength and the way you embraced me, as well as Margaret, who I love dearly, and Pops. And there's nothing I enjoyed more than coming over with some greens and a bird and sitting back and kicking it for a little bit, because I knew I was in a home where I was welcome, and I also knew I was in an atmosphere that was nurturing. And that's that mom thing. You can't miss out on the mom thing. It's like a drug. You got to have it. And so I appreciate the fact that Margaret loved me. I surely loved her. And Mom, I'm going to get a bar soap to lay next to I know I'm going to be cussing later, but just wanted you to know I'm always aware of that sort of thing. And Pops, you just chill now, because you ain't got to do nothing but rest and dress. I love you too. So thank you to both of you for allowing me to carry this on for as long as we have.
So my I'm just asking, should we get one bar, or should we just the four pack while we're at it?
Well,
I mean, that's my Boy Scout instincts, you know, being prepared, coming back on.
True. Well, I will find out how many bars we need after Gary breaks the show in proper. So, Gary, if you would.
I didn't do this right.
BlackAthlete.com. Looking for the definitive source for information? BlackAthlete.com, that's where it's at. From Jackie Robinson, Muhammad Ali, to Michael Jordan and Shaq. Football, basketball, baseball, and everything in between. Plus all the major players and stories. Daily features, video on demand, and Black Athlete newspapers coming to a city near you. Tired of the same old sports programming? Check out BlackAthlete.com. Sports the way you like it.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I can name that tune in five notes.
Yes, G.
My head's about to explode. It's about to explode, okay?
Oh,
and
shit.
This reason now, why it's about to explode.
Okay.
You've been watching first take again, haven't you?
Mine, Cowboys over the Bears. Mine, Aaron Rodgers. Where do we begin with this? Let's go with John Gruden first. Let's see what John Gruden does. But hey, let's move as soon the NFL. The center for California was like 5 minutes in greatness.
The floor will grant 5 minutes to the distinguished gentleman from California.
Mm-hmm. Recall ex-Raiders head coach John Gruden. Dumb Borses Smith has lips the size of Michelin tires. He called the commissioner, Roger Goodell, and a clueless anti-football. That was in 2012. And he called then VP, now president, a nervous, clueless. He also criticized President Barack Obama. He also shared sexist memes about female referees, denounced the Rams recruiting, a gay player in 2014. I mean, he's offended just about everybody.
The emails that were leaked to the public.
We wanted to make sure we understood what it was, with the objective of making sure that we had the best possible workforce and workplace policies, procedures.
And Roger Goodell hiding the findings from the league's investigation into the Washington football team.
NFL coach and former Monday Night Football analyst John Gruden announcing his exit as head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders.
You see, once they were released, Gruden was toast, resigning from his post.
He said he had a bad moment.
Yeah.
Come to find out, you had 7 years of bad moments.
Many reacted fittingly. John Gruden's career is over. It's over. Facts. However, Gruden appears to be going on offense. Now, he's filed a lawsuit in Nevada State Court claiming, through a malicious and orchestrated campaign, the NFL and Commissioner Roger Goodell sought to destroy the career and reputation of John Gruden. Now, Gruden is seeking unspecified damages and punitive awards. His attorney noting, there is no explanation or justification for why Gruden's emails were the only ones made public out of the 650,000 emails collected in the NFL's investigation. This is about to get hot wings level spicy. Why exactly do I...
Hot wings, buddy. We got to get black folks in this hot wings. Don't forget the hot sauce.
Okay, can I, to be honest,
Gary? Gruden's got a case.
Oh shit! Yeah.
As much of a 36 carat asshole as he is,
true.
He has a case.
Yeah, that's a great go. Mm-hmm. Look,
yes.
Look, the NFL has skeletons in their closet.
They'll give him $100 million to go away, and we'll never know what the final money was. In all due respect, Gary, when that bastard 45 tried to take over the government, and excuse my manners, peace and blessing, deacons for defensive justice, good evening. When that piece of shit is still walking around free, anybody else like the Black Panthers who tried to do right for the community, you had brothers gunned down in the damn apartments, taken off like dogs, and 45, the Russian spy, is still walking around fucking free. Whatever happened to an investigation in New York? We ain't heard shit
this
about
is true.
That.
This is true.
Fucking real. You talking about
and
white privilege. It's beyond white power.
As the young man says that, I want to say thank you to two other gentlemen who have provided us with information over the years of the show. Radio Reggie, an amazing brother, always allows us to smile at sometimes things when they get a bit crazy.
Yes.
Has always contributed. And from this point on, a ham sandwich will now be known as a Reggie.
Thank you. Thank you. This is right. Almost good as the Bullets. This is almost good as the Baltimore Bullets and Washington Wizards winning. Damn, I can't take it. I can't take it.
I also want to recognize, I didn't know he was blood at the time, but he is now. Very erudite brother. We met at the Super Bowl a few years ago. Always on point. And I was blessed with the insight to hang around with this cat for a while. And he gave me my first job, Dean of Students at the University of Mars, my brother, the mighty Oba, Pat Freeman. Hail, Oba.
How we doing? And congratulations on your many broadcasts. 1,500 is an outstanding achievement, and I'm honored that you've allowed me to contribute on this great, great program.
Thank you, my brother.
Hey, Mike, I got to say this, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love my cousin to death. You know, we blood on the Howard side, on my mm-hmm. mom's side. But this is the reason why I act the way I do, because of my African family. And I tell everybody, Pat made me look like Clarence Thomas. I've always said, I said I'm a conservative one compared to Pat. They said, what?
Well,
when I get mad, I bring the mighty over to the conversation.
One thing that everybody brings to the table that I love, I am blessed with an army of critical thinkers. Everybody knows how to take apart an idea and come around with a different idea, or even punctuate that idea even further. That has never been a problem with us from the time we've been on air in March of 2012, where we can switch from subject to subject with relative ease and maintain our clarity, as well as provide speculation and deductive reasoning as we carry forth the agenda, whatever it may be. But our goal has always been to follow through on the words of Roland Rogers, the man who set up the Black Athlete Sports Network, who strove for objectivity in making sure that Black athletes, male and female, were given a fair shake in not only assessing their talents, but defending them from the racist values of the white supremacists that they have to deal with 24/7, 365, just like everyone else. And in the 9 years that we've been doing this, we have seen and felt the sting of white supremacy affect even as something like as small as the games we play. And because of smart gentlemen like you, and of course the ladies as well, I'm thankful that every time we come on air, we can always come out with something different and something to make people say, you know what, I got to think about that. And thinking is good, because that's what columnists have been earning their keep on for centuries. Whether it was to the left or to the right, if a columnist was good enough to make you think, they have done their job. And I would like to say that because of you guys, we were able to do our job.
for 9 years plus, and there's not enough thank yous I can bring forth in that regard. But yes,
Michael, we must be doing something right because people keep stealing our stuff.
I know I ain't stealing our stuff, G. I called 911 the other day. Those motherfuckers are stealing our shit, but that's okay because you know you can imitate something, but you can't emulate it. And we've seen plenty of imitators come down the pipe, but we have also seen their lack of vision, because what they're looking for isn't so much to copy us, but to be original. It's hard to be original, and that's why this format's unique. You don't have as many cats and kittens sitting down and breaking stuff down. And from the time Celeste came in, my beautiful friend Celeste, my sister Celestial, Sonic Cheryl with a beautiful southern lilt, Bobby Booker with her direct approach, our little sister Rhonda, the queen of extreme Harper. We've been blessed with a group of folks that know what the hell they're talking about, and we like that. And in addition to that, I want to also welcome another erudite brother. I've liked him from word go. He's always been a forward thinker. He's always been a critical thinker. And he's been a major difference in making our show be just something that's there to something that's had true impact and staying power. And that's my brother, Eric Satterwhite. Eric, good evening.
Brother Michael Lewis, 1,500 strong, huh?
Yes, sir. And thank
awesome,
you for
awesome.
Everything you've done. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, I mean, you know, nothing to it, man. It's just how we get down, how we talk, man. You know the old saying, danger, danger when you taste brown sugar.
Hello, come on. All that good stuff.
Yes, sir. That was from that song, Louie, 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 Louie. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. The original song done by Hot Chocolate and Stories, which was the group that copied it. But in the original version of Louie, Louie,
correct.
They said, I don't want no hunky in my family. And that's exactly right. Having said all of that, let's go where Gary started this. Because there's some crazy shit going out there out west with y'all at the University of Cal Berkeley.
Now, oh, yes.
We've seen how this thing has developed. We saw Aaron Rodgers first tainted the situation by lying his ass off, and nobody put him in check until it was too late. And even after they said you're a lying son of a sack of shit, he doubled down on the lie and had the nerve to quote Martin Luther King of all people, letter from a Birmingham jail. So since he copied the letter from a Birmingham jail, here's hoping you end up in fucking jail one day, because you ain't going to run away with that shit for so long. Now, the big question is, Cal has a game that was rescheduled against Southern Cal. Now, I've never really heard a game rescheduled for 3 weeks later.
What?
You know, I could see one being moved to the next day, but Gary, how are they trying to spin this shit?
Okay, we have a bigger problem than that. Because this Saturday,
mm-hmm.
Cal is going to play a game at Stanford this Saturday.
Okay.
So far, nobody has said a word about the game being played this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, Do they
play
the game this Saturday or not?
Question, Gareth. Why was it changed? Why was it moved to Stanford?
Yeah.
No, they played Stanford this Saturday.
Okay.
They moved the USC game to December
4th. Oh, I see. It was scheduled to be played this Saturday. Yeah. Other than like hurricanes or whatever, you know, there's really, you know, you don't see changes like that. Or either, you know, even with the COVID protocol from the last couple of years, you haven't seen teams change change schedules like that. I mean, Odell.
Several levels, but we know they got to make their money, and we know, at least from the current records, both schools don't stand a chance of possibly being bowl eligible. And given the scenario from last year, where there were actually two schools that had losing records and still held games, they were like, well, why are you trying to pull this off? Because it doesn't look good. But they don't care because they're trying to make money. Now, I say this even as we know our brother Gary has a ticket for the game. And he says the stadium, holds 70,000 people. So even if they did that minimally, we're talking anywhere from a $2 to $5 million weekend. Now, Eric, you're out there on the West Coast. How do you, how do you sort this madness out?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's quite fascinating because in team sports, I mean, the way you have to manage player health with COVID-19 is always going to be a dice roll anyway, right? You know, I mean, any and every time it's going to be a dice roll. But, you know, when you have that level of contraction, you know, where that many players are impacted, obviously whatever's taking place in that environment is not working.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of clear. We have seen far too often now, though, when you have the large contagion events have not been as predominant as they were like pre-vaccine, right? So obviously there's been a shift upward. People congregate, they go to games all the time, no masks. I mean, you look at some of these collegiate stadiums, you know, these young people are face-to-face, mask-to-mask, and there's no contagion events afterwards. The same students show up the next week, right? So you're not reading like, okay, 5,000 hospitalized after such and such game. So for players to have that level of contact where they're being impacted, that level of contagion, it speaks to something outside the lines to me, you know, from a coaching standpoint, you know, like what's taking place, you know, what's kind of congregating is going on, right? You know, in that environment, right?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Right? Because when you start
looking at when a team travels to another team's place, you have separate rooms, right? I'm assuming you have separate rooms.
Well, in football, because of the numbers, they usually roommate, right? Because of the numbers.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is, if you have an outbreak, right? And you see the outbreak, don't you need to separate these guys? I don't understand.
Well, I mean, that's a small part of it, right? Because, you know, you have the locker rooms, you have practice, depending on what the setup is. Do you have team apartments, right, where teams stay together? Obviously, you're supposed to have uniforms cleaned and washed, and it's not uncommon. We've seen it in the field with the Rams when they were playing in St. Louis, staph infections, right? That killed Jack Snow, you know, one of the former Rams. He was a TV announcer. There was a lot of staph infection. I mean, and that's on the low in the NFL, too, with all the turf burns, because there's so many people that have contracted turf burns and had staph infection. Oh, they'll be out this week, you know, doing an injury. They have a staph infection from that turf. So that's when they started augmenting the turf, because there were so many turf burns at all levels. many players for contract and staff infections. Very common in the NFL in that old turf days. They've swept that under the rug, you know, media-wise,
wow,
and things of that sort as well. So if you look at collegiately, you know, again, in the team sport genre, well, I always felt like you really had to push prep sports back when it first COVID first hit. It's because, you know, having been a prep coach for years, you know, you go on the road to these, you know, locker rooms oftentimes, too, as the visiting team, you'd be in the girls' locker room. And may I say, I mean, I went to some locker rooms that were considered the girls' athletic locker room in some predominantly upscale schools, if you could catch my drift. And those locker rooms were F the F up, right, in terms of hygienic things. My goodness. And, you know, and, you know, so that – I used to point that out to my players. Like, they're, you know, we're allegedly, you know, representing the so-called inner city. I mean, you could eat, you know, filet mignon, Tony McLean chef style out of the locker room and some of those other locations at our gyms. But going the road, they were heinously dirty and filthy. So,
Eric, I'm more ham hock than someone.
Okay, all right. All right, yeah, yeah. Hey, nothing wrong with it. Hey, man, hock it up, my brother. Hock it up, man. I ain't mad at you. So, yeah, I ain't mad at you, man. Hock it up. But the thing is, you know, when you go in those environments in the team sport, you know, you'd always want to teach to hygiene, correct? Wash your uniforms. Wash your hands. Right, so you have a collegiate level school. What always connotes to me, just having, again, working in these team environments where you would have situations where in high school, and you don't hear this too often, where all of a sudden there was a mononucleosis outbreak, right?
Oh,
geez. Right, mono, that term, which they call what so-called kissing disease, right? You know, these high school people out there wilding, right? Intermingling,
right,
per se. Mono outbreak. And there's an other outbreak. So when you see that kind of level, you have vaccines. Everything's, I don't know what these players are into. I don't know how they're co-mingling on campus, but I'm feeling co-mingling activities of some sort damaging, right? They can't get it together.
Gentlemen, I want to add to the discourse a young man who I met 3-4 years ago. And as we were talking, he is an archivist and historian. He's been involved in some major projects. And when asked about purchasing one of his books and asked for further information regarding the discount, he said, let me pray on it. In other words, buy the damn book. And his self-defecating humor is wonderful and adds to the mix because he always brings another line of thought to things. And of course, we are talking about the one and only Professor Fred Wittig, head of Black Heritage Review.com and CEO and producer of the Black College Sports Encyclopedia, revised edition. Fred, I want to say thank you for all the time you sat down and talked, put some good stuff in the pot always, and your insights. And I don't always agree with you, and I think you already know that. But what I love about you is that you know what the hell you're talking about, and you make folks think, which is the key to anybody
who's
capable.
Opinion. Him being from Winston, that's a matter of opinion.
I didn't say that. Ooh. I didn't say that.
Ow.
But yes,
ow.
Professor.
Ouch.
Yes, ouch. Professor. Good evening, and thank you.
Is that kind of the Reggie out there making them peanut butter and jelly sandwiches?
Hey, I have fired Jerry. I have fired Jerry Racist Ass Jones.
In so far as, you know, well, first of all, good evening. Since I'm this further south, I'm gonna like a southerner. I'm gonna speak to you. Good evening
with a southern draw.
Insofar as not always agreeing, well, that's life in general. As my brother told me, you know, when I was a youngster, he says, well, you know, we don't always have to agree. You know, this is America, so you're allowed to be as wrong as you, so, as long as you choose to be, as wrong as you choose to be. So, you know, if you don't agree with me, you know, you can be wrong. Life still goes on.
I love this, man. You agree with me? You can be wrong. I love it. Hey, but Mike, can I say something? When the professor narrated on Black Magic, I gotta say I was a proud Negro because Mr. Stephen A. Smith, after he saw the finished product, had the dash and nerve to say, "Damn, I wish I could have done it." But you know, in all due respect, Professor, I'm glad you did it because I know it comes from not only the soul, the mind, the heart, but you did it out of love for the CIAA. I know Stephen A. is a ram, but sometimes that brother seems like he forgets, you know, by the CIA. Maybe now that's why he's giving money now. Maybe now he's trying to, you know, atone for himself for trying to get attention on HBCU. I don't know, but I'm glad that you did. That's all I want to say. I'm glad that you did and not him.
Well, you know, you have to understand he's from a different generation. I mean, he came along with my kids and, you know, how it is with your children, you know. Again, that's where you have to apply that philosophy. You know, they can be as wrong as they want. They don't have to agree, you know. So, and not only that, you know, you all take him serious as a journalist. I don't. And even though he said that's what he is, you know, think about it. You all believe in Superman and not realizing Clark Kent was claiming to be a journalist too. But then when something went down, hey, you know, he pulled off his journalist uniform and put on Superman and went and did what he needed to do and went back. But having said that, you know, one of the things that I constantly tell people, don't listen to people out there in the hinterland. Read some stuff your damn self, because if you wait for them to come tell you the story, they're going to tell you the story that they want you to hear. And unfortunately, you know, there's that element out there. I mean, he's making large cash, so he got to do something with it rather than pay taxes on it. And the way you do that is you give it to a charitable organization, whether it's your alma mater, whatever. You know,
true.
I've been blessed to see a different side of him, because when we first met, it was vinegar and baking soda. We didn't, you know, he didn't know who he was talking to, and frankly, I didn't care. So at the end of the day, you know, I did what I was supposed to do. We went through the, you know, before every game, there's this little briefing session and stuff. And from time to time, I've had to put some people in place because, hey, that's what I know, that's because that's what I do, you know. And
amen.
You know, I've had more than one person. Well, who did this? And I don't sit there and say I did, as a rule. I let somebody else know who did it. Or if I'm being like Ricky and trying to be a smart aleck, what I would do is say, look at the back of the book. Oh, this is yours. Yeah.
Well, you know, Professor, that moment when we found out that you had contributed to Black Magic, and that a lot of the truth that you doled out still was not acknowledged, that they tried to bury from this point on, really set me on a whole different course thought-wise. And everybody on this thread has been involved in a watershed moment. With our brother Gary, we know it has been his constant efforts against renaming mascots and getting rid of names, and Gary has done that with such aplomb that from the time we started until now, no team will call itself Redskins on a high school collegiate level. And we got Gary to thank for that, because Gary was consistent with all of that. When it comes to my man Tony, the fact that we were able to carry on with this show, because there's no way I could have done it by myself. I mean, I could have done it by myself, but it would not have the depth and breadth that it would if Tony hadn't been in the mix here. And
Tony showed me that I wasn't alone and how much appreciated that. When it comes to Reggie, Reggie has always been consistent on one thing about telling people.
That ham sandwich, buddy, that ham sandwich.
That's right, that politics is at best a local situation and that you must stay on top of things locally in order to germinate progress from the ground up so that it's truly grassroots and not just something that is picked out of thin air. Eric, our moments crystallized when you first brought up that bastard Sandusky and the dick dastardly things that he was doing over at Penn State. That led to an almost 2-year campaign where we kept hammering at those sons of bitches for the stuff that they had done. And, of course, they never totally relented, but as Reggie would say, they were copying and they were in our chat room so much.
Yep.
It was like an episode of Spy versus Spy. Those motherfuckers was in there every day, you know. And
I'll be
again,
saying, they're still in your shit again, Mike. Mike, I'll tell you, they're still in your shit again. Poor gang, got our corner.
And Professor, whose mantra is we have to tell our own stories, is so true. And he allows us to continue on that path by bringing us down to earth and sometimes bringing things down to brass tacks because, you know, the mindset might be a little different in North Kakalaki as it would be in New York, as it would be in California, as it would be in Connecticut and all that because of our own situations within. But we make sure that we're grounded enough to understand that that path lies backwards and forwards to going down south, coming back up north and heading out west with the same focus and the same direction. And I don't think a lot of shows can do what we do. And again, I thank everybody for that.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. I mean, we've covered, you know, so many things at the times I've noticed. I can recall, Black Athlete Days when I first started writing there. And I think T-Mac did and Michael, of course, did a radio show through that website where we were, I think we were celebrating the birthday of Malcolm X. We did a show way back, you know, early. And what I enjoyed about that, you brothers just invited me. You know, we just started really working together, but your intuitions and instincts felt like maybe I had could say something and contribute to the point. And to me, that says a lot because, you know, I don't really push volunteering, participation in certain things because when you're an actual experiencer, the kind of what you're speaking to, you don't have to prove that point. I mean, that's the difference here. You're talking about people who have experienced it. So when you say Black Magic, you know, I mean, I watched my father ball throughout that feature, you know. I watched a lot of people, I mean, highlights I'd never seen before. I'd never seen him, you know, take off like that on the jump ball. I said, shit, when's he coming down? You know, I mean, I just never seen these things before. You know, I knew about the legacy. I could not know it with all the memorabilia around me, right, and my interactions, just what I grew up into. You know what I mean? So it wasn't – I didn't see the specialty part. I knew it was different. Again, when you have that bring in and all our collective hands-on experiences. So we're not speaking from being a journalist who befriends an athlete and says, well, that's my boy. That's bullshit. If you have a media pass and you're there to report and then you befriend, just say it's Carmelo Anthony as a name. Oh, that's my man. No, you would not have met him without your media pass. So that became your mission to befriend and get in those circles. It serves an athlete's purpose to so-called befriend you because there are so few melanated people in media, if you use that term, right? And plus, if you're at the time when media is predominantly, say, newspaper or whatever, they want favorable reports, right? So they're going to be cordial to you. But for you to turn that into a relationship and share it like we came up together around the block, you know, we played ball, you know, at the park, played in the same AAU teams, and now we go ourselves. Well, no, that's not the story. Your media pass gave you access, and you basically became a groupie. You know, more than you were a journalist, right? And then you use these relationships, per se, to bring the point. That's not journalism. That's fraternization, as they would call it in the military, right? Officers don't fuck with enlisted, all that kind of shit. So a lot of what we speak to here is experiencers, right? I mean, I know what it's, and many people here, you know, we harp, we bang hard on the HBCU legacy. The book came out. I mean, we bang hard. We clap. We consistently share the story. And we're not even close to being done. Why? Because I know what it's like to have a conversation with Dick Barnett and to talk about the National Basketball League before the NBA and how the Cleveland franchise of the Pipers was the first professional team, which spawned everything afterwards, right? All this shit bleeds together. So we're speaking to hands-on. We're not speaking as a fan or someone who read the fucking book. You know what I mean? I know what it's like to, you know, kibitz with John Merritt. That's not bragging. That's just what the fucking deal was. You know, I mean, I know what it's like to go watch Ed Temple put his practice together. I know what it's like to watch Olympians run and prep, joke, you know, get ready, train you because, you know, Tiger Bells were our basketball trainers, right? Who does that? Who has a track team of women do the conditioning for the basketball team anywhere? That's what happened at Tennessee State. You know what I'm saying? I mean, so when you start looking at these things, we're not speaking from fantasy or some kind of, you know, book we read shit. You know what I mean? It's speaking from direct experience or those people in our circles who have had this enrichment. Big difference. Huge difference than anything else, right? I mean, you know what it's like to strap up, Mike. You know, you've been out there. You know what it's like to, you know, be in those press boxes. You know what it's like to be down there. You know, T-Mac, you know, and you've always represented Gary, you know, staying the course with what's important to him. It's always been pretty consistent. And it really doesn't matter if an MF-er rides with it or not, or if they hates on it or acknowledges. Who really gives a fuck what they think? I know I don't. You know what I'm saying? So if they can't embrace it, that's their problem. Hopefully you get over it, Holmes. Sleep tight, take two Excedrins. Bitch, you'll be the better tomorrow, I hope. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, God.
You know, but if not, who gives a F?
I have to ask this of Tony because Tony is the one who has been closest to the bone with all this. Tony, when you saw our stuff being copied and put out the first time, now I know Gary and how he reacted to it, but I mean for you, knowing that you were there, and you see almost verbatim the same stuff.
No, verbatim. No, Michael, verbatim. Hey, Michael, I'm sorry, verbatim.
That's right. That's right. Say that shit like it matters. Verbatim.
Verbatim.
So, Tony, how did you react to that? You know, honestly, before you shared it with us.
It's weird because, you know, I was mad. I was very, very upset because, see, the one thing that the black man has always had to deal with is being illegitimized, whether it was business, whether it was sports, whether it was music or what have you. The first thing that came to my mind was Charlie Parker and Diz and all those guys back in the day that did real jazz. And then they come and try and tell you that Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller were
and Kenny
the,
G.
No. Especially no, Kenny G. That's another kind of filth that I. But more so those guys. More so those guys because remember they will still try to tell you that those guys were the kings of American jazz.
Yep.
And
the Kings, huh?
Exactly.
King just went.
Sacramento Kings.
Or as Shaquille calls them, the Queens. But that's another. Again, that's another. That's another story in and of itself. See,
right
now, we've all heard the phrase. I want to make sure I get this correct. Imitation is the greatest form of flattery. Well, let me say that, you know, bullshit is always bullshit to coin a phrase as well. And that's stealing. To me, that's the akin
It's called plagiarism, T-Mac.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Violation of copyrights, you know? So,
You know, Jason Blair, who set us back so many years in his time with the
time.
But,
the time.
See,
yes.
But see, here's the thing. Why wasn't Mitch's album brought to the rake to the coals as well? That's the thing. See, I don't have a problem. I see, my thing is always, I'm a journalist. I will, anybody.
That you are.
And that's the thing. Anybody that tries to call me a personality or a celebrity, I will open up 3.5 cans of whoop ass and bring an extra one just in case they keep talking.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's more important. It's to me because again, end of the day, we are disseminating information.
Yes.
And a lot of the information that we've all been blessed to either be a part of or be privy to is special to us because any asshole can take somebody else's words and steal it and take it for their own. But
that's right.
It's the way of how they deal with it is going to give away how they really feel about it. See, there's a reason why Gary is passionate about his activism. There's a reason why Fred and Eric are passionate about their HBCUism. I have to call myself, which reminds me.
I like the term.
I got to call Mr. Webster again tonight. So, I'll just. But the thing,
is that the little brother that used to be on TV with Alex Carr? Is that Webster?
It's his uglier white brother. I say all that because it was always funny to me, and I said it on the air. If y'all call yourselves the worldwide leader in sports, why y'all got to come to our hood and take from us?
That's right.
It's always about the hood, though, right? I mean, the hood pushes the agenda on everything. Trends, the patterns. I mean, if you look at, the brothers in the Bronx, right, when they were burning buildings down and scorching them shits for insurance money and turning it into a hellhole, right, and people were living there and they birthed hip-hop, right, so they, which is a fact, right, early hip-hop. But when you look at the gangs that were out there that were being filmed, how they made their own jean jackets with their own logos, right, that's now urban attire everywhere. That's not our brand. Black These King. Brothers did it on just a genuinity type thing. And back, I've shared over the years, I just got tired of just doing it, but I've shared over the years many news articles from all across this country, news reports, totally biting shit, that they hear here. Letter to the letter.
Mm-hmm.
I can recall watching a name that popped up in today's conversation on television, literally 100% quote a statement I made the night before verbatim, recorded it. I said, Mike, and I sent it to Mike. I said, Mike, yo, check this out. And
sure enough,
verbatim.
More than a few times.
More than a few times.
It wasn't happenstance. It was a whole lot of times. Yes.
A whole lot of times. And this, and what's interesting to me about, an MF-er like that, remade his whole brand off reorganizing what he hears here and modeling certain tones and languages, like using the term that we used a lot here, that was his basic standard I hear all the time, like pump your brakes. Oh, that's ad nauseum.
Mm-hmm.
Flip your script. Ad nauseum. Ad nauseum now, right?
Yeah, emphasis on the nauseum.
Ad nauseum and ad nauseating. So it's like Bo Diddley sued all these people who did his riffs, right? Now, when I heard when Bo Diddley sued, for copyright violations, he got all this loot for years of people ripping his shit off. When he sued, he played a note, like two notes that he knew it was a stolen medley. Trust me on this. I thought I got a musical ear. I could not tell the difference, but it was his stuff. He created it, so he knew automatically it was his. Same thing here. I mean, I can watch a feature called 30 for 30 or some bullshit, and know that I felt like, fuck, damn. I mean, I was the inspiration for this bullshit show. They never thought about mm-hmm. this topic. And yep. then I've seen other things we've discoursed about populate all the single time. That's why we say it's like the bandwidth of followership because, you know, there's more archives of these shows being stolen for creative principles by producers and other people across the nation because you can go to, I forgot, Blog Talk. You can go to Blog Talk, pull up these
yep.
shows, right? Keep researching a bit to see, you find your excerpts, hire these little tech heads who get paid this money and just stream one person's thoughts and dialogues. And hey, find out what radio show this brother was on. How many times did he speak? Stream it, record it, give me a full tape of only those excerpts. It's like a scouting
tape. There's
tape.
No more obvious, Eric, there was no more obvious example of that than after the Seattle Seahawks won the Super Bowl. Now, we have been using the term field generals for the longest time. And
he's
here,
done
is
it. Yep. Yep.
Here is Trent Dilfer's mm-hmm. counterfeit ad
yep.
on
mm-hmm.
air talking about how masterful Russell Wilson was as the field general. I'm like, you lying motherfucker. And obviously we know where it came from because we've only been doing it since
yeah.
forever.
There's yeah. so many of them, man. I mean, it's like, I mean, to the point, like, This station here in its organic form, again, you don't have to sell it. Enough, there's nothing mm-hmm. like experience it directly, correct? Motherfucker says, you know, hey, he's seen a UFO and you haven't seen them. You're not supposed to believe it until you see them. That's fair.
Hey.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have direct experience and we're speaking from direct, so it's not like this is some wishing well fantasia. We've been pushing that
exactly.
HBCU paradigm, agenda, 24/7 every chance
yes.
we get, and we're not even close to even touching much diaspora. The happiest thing mm-hmm. we can put out four quarters. So you don't think that shit's sitting in the archive and copied and pasted all over the place? I hear excerpts on that all the time. How many Hall of Famers have gone in since that book went out? I mean, that weren't in at the time.
Mm-hmm.
That weren't
yeah.
in at the time.
That's right.
I know at least one. Probably like about four or five.
From Brazil to Harold Carmichael. I can't
mm-hmm.
keep up.
Mm-hmm.
Donnie Shell. I mean, it goes on.
Yep.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
I mean, all I got to do is crack it open and see. And someone thinks, well,
yeah.
because you know it's not sitting on the Barnes and Noble shelf. It's not influenced garbage.
Mm-hmm.
That's how this shit works. Oh, Coach McLendon, pound it.
Yep.
I mean, if I see one more, you know, award given to him for some kind of coaching thing that's been added and foundations and tools
mm-hmm.
and everything since,
mm-hmm.
you don't think there's no influence here about that? Oh, absolutely. It was done
exactly.
that way. And the thing is, how do you honor the legacy of the people that go before you? I always share this. These men that we talked about, you know, from the Willie Lanier's to whomever it may be, the Buck Buchanan's, all these brothers just
mm-hmm.
putting that HBC work, no matter what it was, from track, Fred's written all these brilliant books, on and on, talking about all these different things like that, the Professor Fred Whitted, that is. All this information is not cult. What the fuck is it? This is well documented because they know where the facts lie, like anything else, where the stream is. No one's going to
mm-hmm.
give away the kiddie pot. But at the same time, when I watch a person sign a new contract for seven figures, off totally recreating his branding soundtrack of what he's borrowing from here and
mm-hmm.
utilizing this and trying to claim that's his own creative principles and bringing these things. There's nothing you've done creative. It's all duplicity and hijacking.
Yes.
You have hijacked
it.
So if you listen tonight, my Negro, you have hijacked
mm-hmm.
this shit. And so
yep.
whatever your little foibles or crumbs you throw at it, you're a chump. Because the power is in the acknowledgement. But now, bringing on some HBC, we watch the NBA channel, you know, have these HBC. I'm flipping through one night, I see all these people from Tennessee State on the NBA channel. Oh, that just happened because they elected to do so. Bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm like, who are these damn people from Tennessee State on the NBA channel talking about the school? I'm like, what? Oh, so now these brothers want to coach at HBC. Oh, Reggie Theus wants to go to Bethune-Cookman. Oh, Eddie George wants to go to Tennessee State. Oh, Deion Sanders, while convalescing in the hospital, interviews at TCU. Oh, but he's all in the Jackson State, sorry. But all of these things.
Exactly.
hey,
he was saying,
but Mike,
But I know the news about Virginia Tech with Fuentes getting the act. And mm-hmm. it's interesting that his buyout was originally reported to be $10 million. Mm-hmm. Now it's 8.5. So I guess
he'll
be,
Reg. He'll owe them $200 by the end of the season if this keeps up.
This is the part that I had the pleasure of telling a European today on ESPN 106.1, and Eric gonna get a kick out of this. He said, okay. "So Reggie, what's your thoughts about the situation as far as recruiting at Virginia Tech?" I said, "Do you want me to sugarcoat it, or do you want me to keep it real?" And this is live on air. He said, "No, keep it real." I said, "Okay, well, let's go back to Marcus Vick. Do you remember that young man who got caught in a dormitory with two European high school girls? Oh, no, it gets better than that. Let's go back to the players coming on the field to Metallica. Now, I don't know about you, but, I mean, too many brothers now jamming with Metallica. I don't care what the reference is. Oh, yes,
Reg to be real. I actually pawned all my Metallica stuff, but please continue.
God bless you, Reg,
I was the one that bought it on eBay, you know, from
But as I told him, it gets better than that. I said, now, you go to Michigan or Ohio State, and I guarantee you compare that school, and Lord have mercy, don't get me talking about USC, UCLA, or the schools down in Florida. And don't even get started. And hear the European talking about, ooh, the parties don't stop in Florida 3 a.m. I said, no question. I said, but how in the ham sandwich, they go, man, how in the ham sandwich do you sit up in here in Blacksburg where it's Donald Trump territory? I said, you want me to be honest with you? I'll be honest with you. All you see is Confederate flags and Donald Trump signs, and I'm a young black man coming to Roanoke, Virginia, and I'm supposed to sit up here and say, oh, what a great social life. And, oh, by the way, Ronald Curry, when he was being courted by UVA and told them, kiss my ass, I'm going to North Carolina. Now, let's not forget about the social life in North Carolina versus UVA and how they call him everything but a child of God at UVA. But this would be such a Virginia gentleman school and prestigious. Oh, let's not forget the tiki torches where they marched at UVA and that rally they had where a young lady got killed by some cracker from Cincinnati, Ohio, that ran over her with a car, Heather Hyatt.
I can even add to that, you know. A certain basketball player that was nurtured in Massachusetts actually played at the obscure school of Ringe and Latin Tech under Mike Jarvis. When Patrick Ewing decided not to stay at home to go play at Boston College and went to Georgetown, when he came back, quote unquote, home, Patrick can't read this.
Yeah. They don't care. And, you know, you just brought up a great point, Reggie, because I have to ask the professor. Professor, we saw Black Magic. We enjoyed Black Magic. We felt the effect of it, although they still will not give Coach McClendon proper credit for developing the four corners. How did you feel? Did you have expectations that now that we did this, some shit's going to be corrected? And now a lot of shit still hasn't been corrected.
There was a hope that it would be that things would improve, but for those of you who don't know, growing up, my next door neighbor was a Klansman, and I always, you know, we could agree on the day of the week. And if somebody else had a watch, we would, you know, we could agree on what time of day it was.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually from talking to him, I learned to understand him, although I couldn't stand him, if you know what I mean. Okay.
Yeah.
Having said that, I understood when this stuff hit the TV screen.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know, and I'm gonna let you all do the math. They showed what, 4 hours on television?
Yep.
Okay. That's 4 hours out of 150 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Little things like as much as you saw Ben Job on there,
mm-hmm.
My interview was 1 hour and 20 minutes, so it would be like 25-30 minutes. My interview was
okay.
almost an hour and a half. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What you see on TV is, I want to say, 2.5-3 minutes maybe.
Okay.
Of the actual, you know, actually being on screen. My voice
mm-hmm.
is in there several other places. My niece can tell you better than me. But I have learned, and this is why I use that phrase, we got to tell our own story.
Mm-hmm.
I have learned that white folks, even, you know, I think the world of what Ken Burns does or has been doing.
Yeah.
I find it very informative and all that other stuff. But at the same
mm-hmm.
time, okay, if you're standing on this side of the river and look across, it's one thing. You get on the other side and look back, it's another.
True.
And that's called what? Perspective.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have a perspective no matter how well-meaning his advisors are. I know he and his wife work together on a lot of this. He talks to the likes of Skip Gates and all these other folks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's cool stuff. But at the end of the day, he's still going to come up with his perspective.
Right.
And because if you remember remember him, Ben Job, talk about when Dr. King got killed?
Yes.
Which mm-hmm. is why he left, was it University of Tennessee?
Mm-hmm.
They're running around campus yelling and screaming and blowing their horns and, you know, blowing bubbles and whatnot, talking about, they got him. What? They killed
mm-hmm.
that nigga. Well, who are you talking about?
Yeah.
They're talking about King. You see, as well-meaning as these folks like that try to be, they
mm-hmm.
cannot be black. I'm sorry. They cannot be black.
That's right. It comes out one way or another.
It's back to the experience, mm-hmm. man. It's back to that experience. You are rich from that experience, man. It's waxed, man. I mean, it's the milling process. It's in your DNA. It's in your chromosome. It's in your blood. You know, you just
mm-hmm.
grow up with these natural factors, man. You're inbred with that. You can't bleed that out of you. So that's what they want. They want that factor. They want that chemistry. You know, they want
yeah.
that it factor. And if they can't get the it factor, they water it down. And they water it down by throwing material shit at you. You know, that waters people down. I know far too many brothers who I came up with, you know, who started getting that NBA check and shit, and they started hating it. And they started getting
mm-hmm.
milled out of that shit, right, and start going that direction and getting caught up and catching paternity suits and all kinds of bullshit. And then from the
mm-hmm.
outside, it looks good, and then the league is holding all this stuff over their head, knowing that they've got the whole dossier on them. They got these blood
yep.
tests every year. We talk about it every year. What happens to these blood tests at the Olympics? No one talks about it. Oh, they're going to blood test them after every event. Where's the blood?
Exactly.
Who stores that
exactly.
shit? Who keeps that?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
we're not in those laboratories. I know people in the laboratories, and they tell me some fascinating stuff about these things, which I won't go
into.
That. So it
mm-hmm.
goes down to the lab level with us. What makes it tick? What makes it run? What's your fuel? What do you run on? How do you figure that out? Can I train with you? Can I walk with
mm-hmm.
you? Can I work out with you? Oh, he's fast,
yep.
He's twitchy. You know, what can we bring into all these new performance-enhancing things to cut the edge? You know, what can
mm-hmm.
we do to compete more than we've done in the past? What's our recovery? And that's the level.
Yep.
It goes past the surface topical level. So if you just take that perspective and just bring it into the enriched experience that we had, you know, these brothers, you know, when they were playing in front of 6,000-7,000 people or, you know, didn't have vans to drive them around, just got older station
mm-hmm.
wagon packed in
yep.
70, you know me, or,
come
you
on.
Know, Motown going on their reviews
mm-hmm.
with broken down buses that they live in
did.
And do 40 shows in 42 days and all that
come
chitlin' circuit bullshit. All that is a milling process. All that's enriching. You know, Motown making music where, you know, the echo chamber was the bathroom above the piano, and they'd hammer things into the wall to get a sound effect. Mm-hmm. You had a hallway or the wind gust, or a winter was a better time to record because of how the building would shift and creak. All of these organic processes produce something that still people all over the world love, but they want the formula. So you can't master the formula, so they've gone digital with everything. They've gone, you know, AI with everything because they pulled out the wax, you know what I'm saying? They pulled it out and then took it out of certain spin cycles and digitized it. You have people nowadays who've never listened to an album on wax. Total different sound effects than digital. Analog is not even in play anymore. Reel to reels, cassettes,
you
eight tracks. That was a different type of thing. So if you, so they still make albums. I tell you, go get it out. They still make. Do you know they still make stereo sets? And you can actually buy an album. I can't say. Watch the difference. You're gonna feel like you're at the concert when you do that, other than the digital. So you have people who've never ever heard, young people who've never heard anything on wax. Everything's digitized. Because
that's
when
right.
you can't masterize it, you computerize it. And so what happens is the organic processes, but you have people here who can move between those analog and digital worlds. And but by pushing everything into digital, metaverses, all these different terminologies you're seeing and all the different pushes there, it's been watered down effect. And where that's where people have lost these, you know, their soul concentration. So when you come to the depths of that, we can move between both worlds. There's nothing wrong with digital. But if you haven't had that authentic principle, we're here where we can share that particular thing. It puts you on a different vibration. It puts you on a whole different level than these folks. And so,
and
no.
And it puts everything in a different vibration. I'm sorry, brother. We were going back to my aunt's house in Philadelphia on Greyhound. This is way back in the day. I was a little kid. And Shep and the Limelights were on the bus. This was a late trip. And the trip to Philly is like an hour and a half, 2 hours from New York, when they have to go to different stops and stuff. But they serenaded my mother, sister, and any other female on the bus with about 40-odd minutes of just straight doo-wop. And everybody was just loving it. And the resonation of vibe from the bus was amazing. Some people went to sleep. Some people were just smiling and clapping and all kinds of crazy shit. I'm like, fuck, give me the Philadelphia so I can get a soda. But the bottom line was they had everyone in front. And just out of nowhere, we have to make this statement. Steroids were not created for black people. Steroids were created to try to catch up to black people. The unspoken issue of genetics versus eugenics has been in effect since forever and ever. Amen. And in large part, the mouse, the rat, the murinate, as Gary likes to say, they founded much of their mentality with that. They are from the same scion of Avery Brundage and all the rest of the neo-Nazi motherfuckers that couldn't prove on the field of play that they were better. So they thought if they said it loud enough, somebody would buy that shit. But nothing was more heinous when we heard about this bastard Sandusky molesting kids, and that Eric came up with it and dropped it on us. We found out more information. We saw a connection with the North American Manboy Love Association.
Just a network.
They had done it
a total
same
network.
Damn time.
Of course, total network. Total network.
And we saw
a global network. Yeah.
Yes.
And we were the only ones saying network.
Yes. And we would only want to talk about.
We were saying network. We were using network from the jump, and then Obama came in there with an iron fist and was just smashing these fucking networks all across the globe, and there was a global network explode. We sounded crazy as fuck. Conspiracy theory again. Satterwhite's on that.
Yeah.
He's on that conspiracy shit again, you know? And, you know, we were just talking about a network. So when you talked about Virginia Tech real quick, Mike, and hold that thought, but when you talked about that real quickly, we talked about what the network was with Boeheim allegedly, you know, and his assistant coach Bernie Fine, you know, being someone that was a rite of passage for the players to sleep with her, and all the pedophilia that was taking place at Ohio State with the wrestling team. Then that son of a bitch, low-life bastard, never will get out of my, you know, crosshairs ever, and the USA Gymnastics, which we just shredded and smashed and roasted and nuked and barbecued and broiled and poured more oil on and just kept the fire going. And then we were talking about when Simone Biles decided not to go into the Olympics, we connected it to Nasser all day long. Oh, we were out of bounds. Yeah. How do you know that? You didn't interview her. You weren't there. Mm-hmm. How do you know? And then she goes in front of Congress and they blast Nasser and they open up an investigation. So what we said was true, was 100%. Yeah. And it came out the horse's, you know, out the gymnast's mouth. And we talked about the criminal activity that took place and how Michigan State should be cinder, how Penn State should be cinder for the crimes that they committed. That no one is safe there because the allegations, the crimes, the felonies, that energy's still on that campus. And there's nothing that can shake that. It is. It's a slave block, right? So when people go to the Gold Coast and they have that energy, that's what happens at those effing places. And so we found that that was throughout that. We start using the term network. It's a network. It's now all of a sudden it's a global network. The global network. We're finding there's a global network. Mm-hmm. We're finding out there's trafficking, all this shit. And then more comes out with other abuses in all kinds of levels through the sporting realm, in every level, every genre, and it was quiet and Hicks. And so the thing was, and then we had people I remember called with the Sandusky thing who were weighing in. You know, I remember some people were calling in, Caucasians calling into the radio show. Hey, you know, I live in Central Pennsylvania near Nittany Mountain. And, you know, and then they do a whole feature on Paterno with Al Pacino, you know, playing Paterno, which he did a damn good job of. And we find out that, you know, we were smashing Paterno. Like, no way he just effing do it. We were smashing that third mile shit of recruiting kids and all the people who participated in Sandusky and giving him a field hands of just a whole total number of the abuse and how it cycled over and over again. And then the headlines hit and then all the cases. And like you said, these national networks weren't saying shit. They weren't saying shit about, you know, Biles and the USA Gymnastics. No. They wanted to just talk about the Olympics. Fuck that. We're going to talk about it here. And we talked about the next thing you know, nonstop. Congress even called her up, like, whoa, can we have U.S. Gymnastics? It wasn't a dead case no more. And they went there and they lambasted it, Nasser and the FBI and the investigation that took place. None of that was on the dais until we started smashing it. Call it a coincidence. Well, we're up to how many? We're up to 1,500 shows of coincidences.
There you go. 1,500 coincidences.
Yeah, 1,500 shows, hours of coincidences.
And the fact that we've covered politics, sports, music, I have to say from a musical standpoint, when we had two members of Mandrill on making the case for them being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, when we had Marshall Jones, bless his soul, who played with the Ohio Players, and he talked about literally the deal they made with the devil at PolyGram Records, where they told them, we bet that you niggas couldn't get to be this good. Now, what does that sound like to an artist when you're looking dead in the eye of the person who can make and break you when they say some shit like that? It's like, what do you do with that? And we also had Diamond Williams on, our brother Lamont Robinson from the R&B Hall of Fame. So we've done as much as we possibly could to use our forum to pass on information, and we had great people asking great questions, garnering even better information that obviously somebody's using it because they keep coming in our fucking chat rooms trying to take it.
Let's talk about that real quickly. Let's talk about it real quickly, T-Mac. I don't want to lose the train of thought because we're so organic. But let's talk about real quickly how it's still on the dais right now. So how often, how many years have we been lambasted? Where did the plantation owners go? Oh, they became owners of sports teams. How often did we lambaste the NFL draft and say, show us your teeth, boy. That's all that's left. That's all that's left when you watch the NFL draft and they run them through the routine. Yep. Can I see your teeth? And here's Kaepernick with his Netflix show. And what terms are he using? Hello. There's another one. That whole creative philosophy and that whole following empowers these people to do these things. We've been clapping on that concept from day one. Right, and now we're seeing again. So Kaepernick show, I mean, in terms of, oh, my God, he's talking about, you know, the owners are plantation owners. We've been saying that shit, I don't know how long. I mean, 1,500 shows, so, somewhere that's mixed in many times.
No
it's
joke.
Funny, Mike, when you mentioned the music, I always hearken back to Little Richard. Every time
yes.
you would see him on those award shows or whatever, he would always say, you know, he stole, you know, I was pissed before. And, you know, he was always dismissed as, oh, he's just a crazy old black man.
Yeah, just let him talk me crazy. But he was the originator. Mm-hmm.
That's what, and see, that hasn't changed. Again, that's why I use, you know, that's why I specifically talk, that's, when we talk about stealing, I specifically talk about, you know, about Hart, yeah, Charlie and Diz and Miles. Remember, they had to go overseas to basically
to
get the love that their home company didn't do, and that hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
the influx of Euros in professional basketball, however you like NBA or whatever. But the thing is, they tried to push an agenda that the foreigners play better than the Americans. But
they sure did.
Ask the foreigners who were their influences. Dirk Nowitzki has no problem telling you, oh, yeah, it was Magic that inspired me, not Larry Bird.
Mm-hmm. That's a do the right thing pizza shop excerpt shit there. Who's your favorite player? They're not niggas, man. They're not black folks. I mean, the NBA brought in, you know, they have 40% foreign players in the league. So they were successful in watering it down. They created the three-pointers to bring a smaller player in and create more jobs for their bandwidth of audience. So they tweaked the game completely where they made a game on top of the game within the game that's still not the true game. And people are watching a bastardized version every time they watch the game because, you know, we've talked about this many times. You do not see the best players in the world on that floor. You've seen the best people that went through the conveyor belt, that went to the chassis, that went to the GM plant of the processing
Eric, it even bastardizes it even more in this year's bogus 75th anniversary thing, because what kills me is that, now look, we had problems with the 50 greatest players, but these assholes actually took players off the 50 to add to the 75. Because I mean, look, he was a great player then, but 25 years later he ain't.
Exactly.
Well, no, you have to get the modern player. Like, these brothers weren't playing with the three-point shot that changed the game incredibly. And so what happened with that is you have a person, like Wilt used to get so frustrated, you know, about statistics, because he would ask, well, what is this person's percentage, you know, what they call now the mid-range game? So the NBA, again, they tweaked this shit again. So if you shoot 10 shots, right, typically that's 10 field goal attempts. Purely correct, but if five of those are threes, they separate that percentage. His field goal percentage for three-pointers, he went 3 for 5. He's shooting 60% from three. He goes 4 for 5 out inside the arc. He's shooting 80%. He's not – there's separation between percentages. There's separation between the distance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's no longer purely a field goal attempt. It's a three-point field goal attempt, and then there's a field goal attempt. Totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's
and when
a manipulated
you realize,
stat.
And when you realize this was the very league that tried to piss on everything that the ABA did, don't tell them, but you know, the three-point basket started in the ABA. I don't know if you ever
realized. Oh, heaven forbid we reveal that information.
As well as four franchises, and so the thing, you know, four franchises came from that genre as well. But the thing is, if you look at it from that basketball level, how can you measure if Jerry West or Jerry Lucas, and I'm just throwing those names out there, are shooting 30 footers? Those are right 3-point field goal attempts, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not keeping blocked shot records, right? So you know, Wilt getting 30 block shots in a game, you know, is null and void because we don't start the block shot statistic until a certain time frame. Correct?
72.
So that statistic doesn't even count.
72, if I remember correctly, right?
Right. I mean, so in other words, you know, Russell, I mean, this game, Russell could have, like, fucking 30 block shots, literally. But
exactly.
Because they weren't keeping statistics at the time, he's not the greatest shot blocker statistically.
Mm-hmm.
But who creates
yep.
the statistics? You see what I'm saying? So all these
yep.
things is people have found a way to merge in to a professional model that's tweaked for revenue and manipulation and to weaken the real strength. So if you look at all that, what lasts is what? How many three-pointers did Kareem shoot, right? What? He may have 10 in his career, Matt Max, right?
Mm-hmm.
Max,
mm-hmm.
right, Max?
Mm-hmm.
But he's still an all-time
yeah,
leading scorer, right? And back then,
mm-hmm.
he couldn't go straight out of high school like LeBron. So these players are starting earlier, so they're getting more length of time to still statistically chase them, and they still can't are coming up short.
And still can't catch
you
them.
You follow?
Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
my point.
Just one quick analytics thing. I have to say it because, you know, the award came out today. Do you realize
mm-hmm.
under analytics right now that Cy Young would never win his own fucking award?
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly
511
right.
wins,
you know,
right?
I'm
glad you brought that up, Tony, because we remember the time when analytics really showed its anal. When C.C. Sabathia, who had just come off
good brother.
Getting a World mm-hmm. Series for the Yankees as their ace pitcher, was en route to another great season. And then this asshole named Greinke came out of nowhere with this rather obscure record, something like 13-10, and he had a low ERA. But they were putting in factors that had nothing the fuck to do with baseball. And they're putting it up against Sabathia winning 19 games. And who wins? Greinke. Because of the analytics that they had expounded on. This was just a case of baseball making its point, but analytics that had expounded on in every sport. It wasn't enough to just catch a football now. It was about being able to make X number of catches during game-winning drives and other things of that ilk. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, with basketball, the same thing. Eric broke down three-point shooting percentage as opposed to two. You know, they were reaching for shit because the black athlete had come to such a point of domination that they had to find a way to counter it.
Literally. You know, it's like so-and-so hits 315 on days that end in the letter Y and all this other stuff that just I'll come right out and say it. It is a way to keep diffuse black domination. Because I'll use the Houston Astros as an example. And it's got nothing to do with fucking garbage cans. It has everything to do with Major League Baseball. Bo Porter, the manager for the Astros, all those years when they were bloodletted for 3 years and they lost 100 games in a row on four straight years. But they built up the core of the team that wound up winning winning five straight pennants. And also, won a World Series and got to three World Series, like it or not. But the thing was, Bo didn't buy into analytics. So they made sure they got somebody like an A.J. Hinch that would basically be a yes man to the analytics. And and that's how they were able to. But see, here's the thing. He built that team. Just like Mike Singletary built Harbaugh's 49ers team that went to the Super Bowl. But, of course, you can't have black man can't be the leading guy in anything like that. That's the reason why they beat up Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh, even though the only person in Steeler history that's more games than him is the guy that's won the four Super Bowls.
this is what it's come to, and this is what we deal with every time we come on air, you know. And I know that the handling of it sometimes can get to us, because I can see the frustration in Gary's writing sometimes when he knows that these motherfuckers have been in the chat room, when he knows that they've been talking about stuff, where he can wake up and hear Screaming A. Smith talk almost verbatim exactly what we discussed on a Saturday show or a Wednesday show. You know, this is no accident. We know these motherfuckers are in there. My question to you would be, if you love us that much, then stop stealing from us and give proper credit where it's due. And when that happened the first time, it happened by accident because young Travis made it clear that he was working for blackathlete.com, and they had to kind of mumble it as it was coming out. When he first came to Oklahoma City, he scooped their whole staff, all the beat writers. Now, these people, their assignment is to go ahead and get that. They're right close to the bone. And here comes Travis walking in the door, which is why he's having a problem walking now, and he scoops them. He did what a good journalist was supposed to do, but he did it under the wrong circumstances because he came in there and busted their ass. And now they're playing freeze out on him. But this is why Black Athlete and the men and women of Black Athlete are different. We know our subject matter.
Michael,
you can
I'm going to be really, really frank about this.
Go ahead.
Black Athlete, no one there, right?
Yeah, they do.
And it's difficult for people like you, me, Tony, Reggie, to get interviews with major sports people, right?
Mm-hmm.
That should not be happening. We have open door policy. You come in.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, and see, the thing about it's not journalism. It's not about journalism. Stop being journalism. You know the whole story. Back in the day when we all first got into it, you know, I'll use myself as an example. When I got my first, you know, job in the industry, I was lucky enough to get a job when I was in high school. And that was December of 1979. Now, back then, you had, let me just say, roughly about 30 to 35 national, major international media conglomerates.
Mm-hmm.
It's now, what is it, six now?
Four, in all honesty.
I thought, yeah, right? Because two of them do sort of sleep with each other. So yeah, I get what you're saying.
Sexual relationship.
Yeah, and that's an ugly ass baby, by the way. But that's another story. But the thing is, when you go from 32 to six, and if you don't think that the perspective and the direction changes, then you haven't been paying attention. And which is exactly what they want. They don't want you to pay attention. Therein lies the rub. Because see, here's the thing that keeps me going is that, you know, we stay true to what we do. Always have been, always will be. I don't watch very many, if any, other, you know, similar type shows like ours, because I just, you know, I literally do a stopwatch and be like, okay, let me see how long I can hang with it for usually within about 3 to 4. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. You know how we talk about the field generals.
Yeah.
The New York Football Jets.
and I'm being kind considering them a football team at this point in time right now. They have named, you know, there was, you know, the Mike, you know, Mike White had his great game, you know, a few weeks back when he, you know, sort of, you know, caught the Bengals off guard. He's come back down to earth. You know, Zach Wilson is somewhere in Jersey speaking in tongues because he can't deal with the NFL defense.
Yep.
And they bring in Mr. Checkdown, Joe Flacco, who's, you know, whose prime came and went literally in one season when he won his one Super Bowl. Now, in between all of this, a player by the name of Josh Johnson, it was garbage time in a blowout versus the Colts, but he threw for, like, you know, almost 400-something yards, a couple of touchdowns and what have you, played his ass off.
317 yards in a quarter.
Exactly. And the thing is, the guy's been in the league for years and whatever and never really been handed the keys to the city, so to speak. So there's this quote-unquote crisis. You know, the Jets lose again this past Sunday, and there's like a crisis as to, well, who do we start? Why not, you know, if you're playing the whole best man plays, why not let Josh Johnson start? See, here's the thing. The Jets have basically been on the clock since the second quarter of the second game of the season this year. Let's just be nice. Joe Flacco's time has passed.
Yes.
Zach Wilson, you know, he's still trying to, you know, uninsert his head from his behind before they throw him back out there again. Now, why not just see what you're going to be able to get out of a Josh Johnson? Would it be terrible if Josh Johnson played out the rest of the year? Because you know what you're going to get with Joe fucking Flacco.
That's right. You do know. And that's enough. Well, we know why they won't do it now, because it's about money. I remember when the Jets drafted J.J. Jones out of Fisk University. And for whatever reason, I was excited at the fact that the Jets were going to have a black quarterback. Because remember, this is off of Chuck Ealy and the CFL and all kinds of shit, thinking, oh, brother, okay, we'll see what happens. And, of course, J.J. never got no run. But what they did to Brother Man, who's in Seattle now, it was horrible because he was a black quarterback. Geno Smith didn't matter to them, even though they went and spent the second-round draft money to do that. And as we saw Johnson doing his thing, he didn't do anything spectacular. He didn't throw 80-yard bombs or anything like that. He took what the defense gave him. He threw slants. He threw outs. He threw maybe three seam patterns in that whole quarter and was just gobbling up yards. In large part because they were keeping shit in front of them, but that he can manage almost 320 yards in less than 11 minutes tells you everything about the scope of the brother being able to play the position. But, of course, you got to be able to have some backup. And as I say backup, I want to introduce everybody to a young man I've known for 30 years. We covered games together. He has always been a great source of information. I know he loves his Buckeyes, but we love him just as he is. Our brother Patrick Farrar, over the years, he's been so good and putting a lot of information down, brother, and I want to thank you for helping our show maintain for the last 15 years. Can you hear us, Patrick?
Live and living color, fellas. What's up?
What's up, Baker Mayfield? How's that shoulder, Baker? You doing okay, bro? How's your shoulder, brother?
It ain't just him. I can't put everything on him. I have to live on the coaches. Trying to make
Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick, we are officially 1,500 shows in over 9 years.
Lord,
and I want to thank you for your input, brother.
Mike Nye has a good idea.
That's what everybody else is saying, too.
And Patrick, this is all the cussing Mike been doing. And that's the only ones we know about.
No, I was told going some stuff today about, you know, Browns, you know, of the 10 games, you know, people are killing Joe Woods, the defensive coordinator, about a defensive plan. But out of the 10 games, 6 of them, the Browns defense had held the other team to 16 points.
Yeah, and demon kicking ass. Yeah, the demon.
I mean, two games they booted up. They booted up against Sunday against the Patriots, and against the Rams.
He's
but you know, it's a situation where it's a combination of things that injuries, like other teams, have killed us. When you ain't got Nick Chubb and you ain't got Hunt in the game, makes a big difference on what Baker can do. Baker wants to stick around, wants to play Sunday.
And also, Patrick, doesn't help it just that their defense was out there 45 of the 60 minutes of the game.
There you go. It don't help. The defense was hanging down low, buddy. So Baker wants to play Sunday because he knew that contract money is up. So he wants to see as much as he can.
He had no knees, man. He had
He's not renting out rooms at his house?
Tony, there you go, crack on the man commercial. Now, why you got to mess with the man money?
but he has a situation that we have to put in perspective how they deal with some of these contracts. Is he worth $40 million a year? Hell no. But he's worth $40 million a year to that team.
Yeah, it's what you're marketing about. Patrick, what's your thoughts on the way the NCAA has been picking the teams for the college so-called tournament? What's your thoughts on how things are going?
It's a power play on the whole selection, man. Look here, they want to make some money.
It's great to have teams that can crack
the Power Five, but that's fine. But if you pick a team, whomever that might be, are they going to travel well to make it substantial to show that championship game?
Patrick, are you trying to tell me that they think about economics over fairness? No, please say it ain't so. No.
Reggie, page 23 in the NCAA handbook, thou shalt.
Tony, on page 24, was just two letters. Says, "Hell yeah!"
I was gonna try to do some scripture, but I don't want to be blasphemous, with the NBA
blasphemy is welcome here because.
The next 2 weeks are going to figure things out because Kevin said my boys in Ohio, they got to play Michigan State and Michigan back-to-back, bro.
Wrap it up, man. What is your point?
Patrick, we started talking about Cal Berkeley and the fact that the possibility of a forfeit may happen because of COVID. Now, in terms of Michigan and Ohio State, specifically Ohio State because that's your background, what would be the likelihood of them ever having to forfeit a game?
They almost did it last year. Matter of fact, they did do it last year. What happened last year? Michigan was supposed to play Ohio State. What happened? 12 guys got COVID and they canceled the game.
Yeah,
What angers me is the fact that they canceled the game. What really angers me, the game was supposed to be in Ohio. All right, the situation is different now, thankfully, because people have gotten better and moved on.
Yeah.
So we
gotta
we gotta go up there and play and the den of iniquity rather than go play our own game. That ticks me off to no end. You want me to start cussing? Mm. That will make me start cussing more. Let them come down to our place since they booted up last year. Let them come to our place.
Yeah.
We got to go up there this year.
Patrick, I think my man in Oklahoma was cussing after that Baylor game this past Saturday. Talking about
anybody, I told a guy that, matter of fact, guy too is my guy I go get my papers with, who guess where he graduated from? University of Oklahoma. I told him, I said, do not mess with him. We're going to get them. I said, you need to stop drinking that Jack Daniels comes out to reality. Them boys.
He drinking Jack Fanville.
You mean Mad
that's
Dog. Ain't no damn Jack Daniels.
That team could be
Jack Daniels goes down smooth. Mad Dog goes,
They don't call it Mad Dog 2020 for without a reason, because you ain't going to be in time soon.
While I'm in this frame of mind, please let me lay this on y'all. Now, I'm sure some of y'all, if not all of y'all, have seen the movie Bird. You know, the scene where Forrest Whitaker is playing a bar mitzvah, in large part because he needs the money. But, I mean, he's going off, playing stuff, and all of a sudden these very stoic Jewish people are dancing because they're playing klezmer rhythms and all kinds of crazy shit. And they're like, you guys are not bad. We're not bad because we know our subject matter. I don't have to apologize for anybody on this thread. Tony, Gary, Reggie, Eric, the professor, Patrick, we know our shit. And knowing your subject matter is half the battle. I don't need to sit in the press box to tell you what the fuck happened. I don't need to sit in the press box to tell you that Matthew Stafford and Carson Wentz,
now you're officially 1,500 shows in.
You didn't say it with gusto, son. You didn't say it with gusto. Say it with gusto one more time, son. Come on.
I say I'm making plain right now.
It seems like you're a man with a CB is a dangerous individual.
If it's
Delta Burke
on
line one.
Delta
Burke on line
1,500 times. We are here to do work and we're here to do damage because we're tired of bullshit. We're tired of this racist nonsense and these tropes that they throw down on us because for no other reason that they're black athletes to appreciate the greatness of a Serena Williams or Coach McClendon. But anybody else who's melanated, we find ESPN and all the motherfuckers that's involved with them.
Can't wait to hear this word.
Guilty of felony assholery. Motherfuckery.
Wait a minute. Felony assholery.
What's the definition,
Keith? What's the definition, Keith?
No. Red. As I keep trying to tell you, it's an action verb, for Christ's sake.
It's showing action. That's right. It's showing action.
You know, like the brother flying in the Schoolhouse Rock videos. You know,
bird.
That's right. What's happening?
God. That might be segregation today, segregation tomorrow, and segregation always.
it's amazing to me how these guys try to buffer problems with the Rams on, well, there's something wrong. Well, there's something wrong because you put the money in this guy who hasn't risen the level of the team where they should be. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Now, if that were Cam,
And that was somebody else that said, well, he's the problem. Wait a minute. It ain't just him. But water's coming to the right level now. That's all.
As much as I am not a fan of Mr. or Mrs. Beckham. How you gonna blame him one game in? How you literally gonna blame him one game in?
Thank you.
Thank you. That's mm-hmm. something right there. What's the latest on Dwayne Haskins, man? There was a good rap on him last week.
Well, they tell you, I'll put it this way.
Uh-oh.
If Mike Tomlin ain't playing him, I'm stepping back. That's all.
Yeah, I'm saying right.
You're right. I expected to see him in all honesty. When I saw him,
right.
I was like, you got to be kidding me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what did they do? They
come
ended
on,
up trying to Detroit
about
footy
team,
cat
professor.
Instead of outright.
Come on, professor. You heard Harry. Something about it.
No,
professor.
I
come
know,
on, man.
I know,
what's going
I
on?
I know he has been a problem with the team, you know, but I guess they don't want
to play. What the hell is going on? I mean, this man was a first-round pick.
He's been the opposite of what he was in with the Redskins, but, you know, Mike Tomlin has a particular standard.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Guys. Man. Again, and maybe I'm the lone wolf in here. I don't think there's a problem with Hopkins. I think again, I think, like you said, it's like success. I think Tomlin is, you know, he's not ready to throw him in there.
The wolves.
Quite yet. And you know what? I don't got a problem with that because look, if he's not ready, he's not ready. But see, think about this. And take it forever way you want it.
Mm-hmm.
After all those years that Plunkett got beat up in Foxborough.
Yes, he did.
In San Francisco.
He sure did.
Remember, he went like almost 2 years on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
In a sense, his career literally began when Dan Pastorini broke his leg in 1980.
Yep.
Plunkett's career literally started that day. And remember, he won multiple Super Bowls, you know,
that's right.
one playoff games and what have you. I get the fact that we want to see him out there. And Lord knows, you know, Mason Dixon line, Rudolph, whatever. He's not the answer. Hell, he's not even the question. But
that's right.
It speaks more to allow him to marinate because my thing is I want to see him when he gets back on the field. I want him to stay on the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's exactly right. And Tony, unfortunately, this artificial trajectory of players by the NFL proponents and folk who are the arbitrators of who should be who and who should be who and what get totally discombobulated because no, he's not what he thinks he is. Wait a minute, that's why I am for. You know, I don't care what anybody says, and a lot of folks don't agree with me. If you're a rookie, sit your ass down someplace where you can learn the game.
Do not rush him in the game.
Mess his mind up, and then when he can't perform, he's a bust. Wait a minute. Some guys need to see that.
Hey, in Chicago, they got a problem.
Oh, mm-hmm. They're already trying to get rid of Hurts. Field and Tua. They want to get all of them now. Now, all of them have yet to start even a combined 20 games, but they're ready to call them a bust. Now, we've been watching Matthew Stafford movie for years, and we know how that movie is.
Keep them.
It's like an Oprah giveaway. You get an interception. You get an interception.
That's right. You get an interception.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
You ain't seen nothing yet. It's already started. Look what they're doing with the quarterback of Jones up with the Patriots. Look how they're
trying
him on. I'm not saying they're taking anything away because the youngest man's played well within how they want him to play. But they're already shaping it for him already to be something more than what he is.
Cam.
He wasn't all that in Tuscaloosa. And see, I'm glad you brought him up because, see, didn't it look like he hadn't even left the damn team? I mean, he literally walked on and was the dominant player. I mean, look, the hell with that little midget McCaffrey. I've come to the realization he's not an every down player any damn way. He's super tall. Okay? Stop trying to make him your savior.
T-Mac, first of all, there's only what? How many fingers you got? You got okay. You have less than a dozen white running backs in the NFL altogether anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterbacks are not allowed to run, so you can't add them up in it. So why are you talking about, you know, the only teams where the fastest player is a white guy who plays running back to get hurt every other week. So why are you bringing this up like that, first of all? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, being in North Carolina, I can tell you all up front, there is a faction of folks out there who think Cam is the savior. And the
they're right.
When y'all listen, when y'all combine Cam and number 22, 1 and 22 is a winning combination. You'd play that number 122.
122.
Give me a book.
Put that number down.
Straight in box. Can I get 122 straight in box in that Cali 3?
Okay.
Watch it from the front row.
What you saw
was an enigma. This is why I keep telling you all, the NFL is not a sport. It is
entertainment.
Sports entertainment.
Entertainment.
Yes, and Fred, if we're going to entertain Fred's notion, let's look at what's going on with Matthew Stafford right now. His current record for this season is 7-3-0. But his career spanning 175 damn games is 81 wins, 93 losses, and one tie.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that with one of the best receivers in recent history in Megatron. Yeah. But he turned Megatron in the fucking bumblebee because every time he went for him, he put him in jeopardy by getting his ass killed with double and triple teams. If Johnson wasn't the artist and the athlete that he was, Matthew Stafford wouldn't be on a roster right now because when you've been in the league this long and you've had a history of injury and you still have a losing record, our conclusion is, and this was confirmed by Lanolin as well, the boy ain't shit. So, I'm sorry.
Son, you didn't say it was us,
Mike, just a few days ago I was watching film, I was watching a game between the Steelers and most of you all are like in that 6 foot, maybe 6 foot range, right? Megatron is what, 6'4", 6'4",
5'6",
6'5", on at least two throws. Where he was not, I mean, this was not with a Steeler linebacker up his ass. This was a drop back, like a 10, 15 yard out,
mm-hmm.
to the sideline. if Megatron had been standing on top of the goalposts, he still would have missed the ball.
Oh, God.
That's
right.
I don't want to say. Okay, hold up. Now see, this is where I call it. This is why I call this stuff sports entertainment. Okay. Now, you just heard what I said about how high the ball was, right?
Yes.
Guess what the announcer said? He should have gotten that. That was a perfect throw.
He couldn't have caught that
at the end zone for the extra point kick.
But I mean, the obviousness of real quickly to that, the obviousness of the sports entertainment network, the NFL, always starts with NFL films, right? So the Sables have been producing that production forever. You know, the Autumn Wind is the radar. The John Facenda announcements, NFL Game of the Week, all these different bandwidths of information. So it's always been NFL films, right, from day one.
Yeah.
They've had blooper films. They've had the hardest hits. What was so interesting is when they would do all those hard hit videos, right? Oh, the hardest hits of the NFL.
Crunch time.
And, you know, and then, you know, Sable and them all died of the CTE, you know, brain, you know, injuries, right, which dominates the NFL and CTE, right? So we know the sports component, but something has to be brought up about Mike Tomlin, though, because the questions were raised about why isn't he playing this way. He's beyond outrode that Ben Roethlisberger bus. I mean, he has pushed that shit to an agenda and level as far. Not pleased with his handling of Antonio Brown, regardless of, you know, the fact, you know, Omar Epps and the personage of Mike Tomlin is not making those scenarios. I mean, that was extremely questionable. You know, that started the torture chamber mentally for Antonio Brown. I think he's producing pretty well for Tampa Bay last I checked. Josh Connor is ripping shit in half in Arizona. You know, he's really playing well. But when Tomlin got pushed to the envelope about are you going to SC, are you going to LSU, oh, that's media plants, why aren't you asking, you know, Peyton about, Sean Payton about why is he going to take these jobs, why are you asking me? And then there's this conformity that you're playing with here. And, you know, the Steelers suck. You know, their offense is not doing jack. Roethlisberger, you know, and all of his, you know, situations off field, he co-signed on wholeheartedly to keep him under center. But Antonio Brown, you know. Well, you know, we can always say that. You know, I'm not saying that the job is not the coach to win or he's not making the best decision, but no one's above, you know, impunity, right? And so when you start getting those questions and they start dropping, will you leave here, and you start defending your job, then you're going to ride what you're comfortable with. You know, you're not going to make any choices. You're going to go Mason Rudolph, you know, and you're going to do certain things. I mean, I watched him and Marvin Lewis one time, you know, get in the game with, you know, Vontaze Burfict and all those cats. They set the game back 50 years with their personal vendettas of how they were just literally trying to de-cleat each one of them.
Yes, they were.
They set it back. That was as low life a football game I've ever watched. And regardless of the brothers being there, it was so personal and just block shit NFL style. You know what I mean?
That's right.
About who's going to be more machissimo than the other. So Tomlin's, you know, he's done a great job. He's representing, you know, whoop-de-whoop-whoop-whoop. But there are some things where you start placating, too, you know. And Tomlin, this year, you know, he's not in jeopardy. You know, the Rooney's going to ride with them. He's done a great job, you know, the Super Bowl, this, that, and the other. But his team often sucks, you know. And the thing is, you know, if you got to make a change and shift and make some arbitrary changes, but there's been some personnel decisions, especially with Antonio Brown one time and the way he called him out vociferously about some locker room filming for social media or whatever and, you know, clowned him there and just basically tried to ruin his career with other language as well. Those are facts. You know, and he's not above. And what we've done here, which I've always been proud of, you know, when you're among family, you know, we got a family member that keeps getting in trouble. When he gets in the street, we got his back. But when we get him in the crib, it's on. Right? We're going to have that conversation. Or even more than that, right? That's just how we do it. So with Tomlin, you know, there's a lot of teeth that was once in that bear bite a little soft these days. And now you're coaching a job survival as opposed to job decision, and your team sucks offensively. And some of the players like Villanueva and others who they cut and let go off that offensive line and other decisions that they've made exactly have not been in the best interest of the team. And he's ultimately responsible for that. You can't play everything for the last second field goal, Mike. You can't play everything as you outwith the opponent, right? There are certain things that you have to bind with. Now, I think Tom's outstanding. He's done his job. He effed up the Packers Super Bowl. But other than that, you know, we got to look at the why is he not rolling with these brothers. What's happening with the kid from Tennessee? Is he hurt, the other quarterback? Is that why he's not playing?
I think he's on the team.
He's with another team.
Exactly.
He's still out there.
And he still rolled with Rudolph. So this, you know, who put up, you know, the 16, then Rudolph almost got a riot going with his language out on the field, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Cleveland a few years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, and then Tomlin was, oh no, I've never heard Mason say that. So there is a sense of compromise when you last that long and the sense of level of placation that you do.
There
once in a while, you know, it catches up. Then you'll be Denny Green. The Bears are who we thought they were. Is that the best you got,
That's
Denny?
Right. That's right. But you know, Eric, underneath for all of that, people forget. Tomlin was a head coach when he was 36 years old.
Correct.
We always talk about these young pups who they say are brilliant, blah, 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 blah. He's been coaching 14 years and never had a losing season.
Awesome coach.
And the real issue, is Mike's Omar Epps is only 50 years old. If Omar Epps just does another decade as a Mike Tomlin coach, as he does, he's going to end up with more wins than just about everybody. That's what they're in fear of.
Scary, correct, scary. But at the same time, like we talked about Wilson, you got to check off and give the ball to Lynch. You gotta keep that courage up, though. You gotta make that call, though, Mike.
You gotta make that call, Mike. And you know what the funny thing is, guys? When his tenure with the Steelers is over, they're not gonna bring in another one that looks just like him. They're gonna bring in a Sean McVay type.
That's right.
They tried to make a move on him before with that offensive coordinator. Used to be the offensive coordinator for the Cardinals, right? Whatever that coordinator guy was. The guy after the Arians.
Todd Haley.
Yeah, that's
Todd Haley. Everybody's favorite golf coach.
Yeah, that cat. That was the cat that was like on the hush as potential heir apparent, but. He was a flake because he couldn't connect with Ben, right? They couldn't get the offense together because the Steelers wanted to go back to that ground game. I just say to Tomlin is that, you know, he's obviously got the goods. He's an outstanding coach. I mean, you know, he's definitely someone I have a lot of respect for from that level.
He's not above.
No, no one is. I mean, I'm seeing a little. You got to bite down, man. Go ahead and make those calls. Knuckle down, knuckle up, but. You know, again, you know, when you make these personnel decisions, Connor, Brown, and your system, you've got to do better. You know, you've got the personnel and talent because these guys are super performing elsewhere. The Steelers could use that when you're in a 16-16 guy against the big, bad Detroit Lions, whose head coach is boo-hooing after four games and shit. Pass the tissue. Tito, check the fuck up. You got a whole season left. And then he's talking about, yes, sir?
I have never heard big and bad used in the same sentence with the Detroit Lions.
For Dan
Lions.
Campbell? Big, bad Lions. You know, I mean, the big, bad. I mean, if Dan Campbell was a rah-rah cheerleader, they'd be 16-0 after eight games, right? But,
he's
one hell of a rah-rah guy.
That'd be the ugliest, hairiest cheerleader you've ever seen.
You know what I mean? I mean, touring the Ford Motor Company is not going to get you wins, Coach.
The best you could do is to sponsor the old FBI TV show at this point in time right now.
I mean, been watching how the new F-250 truck is made, Coach Campbell. You need to work on getting some better assistant coaches there.
Oh, my God.
Who are not riffing their defensive backs off of a broken play in game one. And then he starts using code talk, crying, talking about, well, you know, I've been, you know, having a few extra drinks at night, but now the weather's changing and it's starting to
Oh, Lord.
And everyone interpreted that he was just, you know, reaching out to Tony Montana after games and breaking the 10 crack commandments, which is don't get high on your own supply.
Well, don't think the fans don't notice this because at the last Lions home game, I overheard this.
Okay, now, boys, come on, talk it up. Come on, son, talk it up. Now, let's give it to him. Come on, kids, let's get the old rickety rack. Break a back of firecrackers, this boom, bah. Buck a bunny, buck a bunny, bah, bah, bah. Break a back of firecrackers, this boom, bah. Buck a bunny, bah, bah, bah.
Yes, what unique characters.
Was that Jared Goff in the huddle trying to rally the team?
Yeah.
I mean, they're terrible.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Mike, he's at the stage now where it's like, I lost my wife, I've lost my dog. I sure do miss that dog.
Hey, Mike.
Yes, sir.
I'm feeling some interest in that. And I got hit with this, which was in to me. I said, damn. Just keep in mind when I finished, I said, damn. Back in 1990, Jesus, my hair's getting old. Back in 1994 was my second year in the with the Nets. And this we got hit with this. The arena in Medline used to be called the Continental Airlines Arena for good reason.
Right. That's right.
And excuse me.
Was that Brendan Byrne?
Brendan Byrne, yeah.
Brendan Byrne.
And they changed the Continental Airlines Arena. Then the year after I left, I left the team, some group called IZOG came in and changed the IZOG Center. They changed the name of the arena for the price of $29 million.
Wow.
Everybody thought that was monumental. Now, check this out. This group called FTX in Miami with the Miami Heat just paid $135 million for name rights of their arena. All right?
Jeez.
I said, that's tremendous. Until I got the word out where you are in California.
Staples,
the Clippers,
right?
The Clippers
Staples.
Just got their building. They got a new building, right? Out in, I think, Inglewood. Is that where it's going to be at?
Okay.
Right? The Nemi rights for that building set a record in NBA. $500 million. And the building ain't finished yet.
That's as much as it cost you the Bucks franchise. Holy shit.
I got news for you, bro. Today, the Staples Center is no longer the Staples Center.
Crypto
Arena, they paid $700 million.
Oh my stars and gardens.
Now, when people talk about that, people talk about that, you know, the because of viewership and money in terms of that is changing the economic of the team.
Right.
Guess what SoFi Arena costs? That football stadium with the Rams costs.
Oh, that was like $800 billion, right?
That was $600 million.
$600 million.
Right.
Okay, I
think correct. So when I told you a couple of weeks ago, look at from April last year to March of 20 to July of last year, we had 453 more billionaires and their companies. Guys, this is an example.
Well, you know what? That's one reason why the NFL viewership has gone up 22%. corporations are looking at that too. And they obviously see where the money is going and where it's flowing. So naming rights going up to that ridiculous amount is a result of that, no question.
Well, the key to those two, there's a couple of things as well. I mean, there's just 40, unless there's playoff games in the arena, there's 41 guaranteed home dates, right?
Mm-hmm.
Staples has had it good for a long time because they get 82, because they get one team that plays there. So the ushers, the concessionaires that work there,
they love it.
And all the different clubs, they get way more dates, right? They just change shirts.
Yeah.
Lakers wear red blazer, black pants, or, you know, security.
Right.
Clippers wear, you know, a purple shirt, black stripes. But it's the same people, just changing out uniforms, right, that work these events.
Yep.
If you look at a calendar year when Staples took off, for example, even though they'll get 82 home dates, some playoff games, you know, the real money comes from all the concerts and events because L.A. still entertain the capital. That's where they make their dough, right? And they make their dough on all those other
All those other venues. Tournaments out there as well.
Exactly. Things like that. So if you look at the NFL, there's only 16 guaranteed football dates at that stadium. And there's 365 calendar years. So they're not driving that individually. It's all the other revenue with the concerts that come there. Everyone plays L.A., right, because of that, you know, what that nature is. That's where they make the money, the conference. That's where Jerry Jones makes all his money, too, because he only gets eight home dates in Texas Stadium.
That's right.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
But there's 365 count. That's where people get misused with just looking at it from the sports-only perspective.
Their first event, you know, in the house that Madam Flowers built, the first event that was there was a Garth Brooks concert, and if I remember correctly, the second or third event was a Manny Pacquiao fight.
And this year,
what they're going to do to cap off this $700 million deal to, you know, to promote what that arena is about, guess what day they're going to do it on?
For Super Bowl Sunday.
No, they're going to do it Christmas. Because what happens
really?
They play the Christmas basketball game. That's when they're going to announce it.
That's right. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Their eyes are globally that's going to be looking at that because folks, that's the game that really for some people starts the season off.
And also, aren't they going to be hosting some stuff for the Olympics? Was it 2023?
It's the venue, man. The venue's what makes the money. So these guys are not stupid. They're not sponsoring these teams. The teams play in the arena, right? Mm-hmm. The money is in the location of the arena and all the events, the conventions, and everything else you can run through there. Because, again, let's chop up the math. 16 maximum guaranteed games at SoFi. That's in a 365 calendar year, that's not enough to float the revenue. Nowhere near enough.
It augments their revenue.
Correct.
It's just part of it. I'm gonna give you another example. NBA today and a group called Sports Trader. They signed an 8-year deal in which this organization, they're going to exclusively handle all the distribution data for the sports books outside the U.S. Now, the deal, all the sports books outside the U.S. that the NBA, that you're going to bet on. Now, the trick about this, NBA is only getting 3% of it in terms of the 8-year deal. But you know how much the company's worth?
$64 billion.
Dollars. So for 8 years, they'll get 3%.
Carry the two.
That's look at the revenue driven by the betting with sports, knowing Sports Trader. Look at the revenue that's going to build to augment their numbers.
Patrick, by any chance, would they be willing to adopt a 50-year-old black man of many small habits?
They consider it, but they ain't going to do it.
Well,
probably not. Patrick, that's my
favorite, too. T-Mac, as the agent for Wesley Snipes, he's not available.
I heard that.
Hey, look, I'm still trying to get my money back from Worldwide West, so, you know, I don't know. I'm just trying to
get my man Worldwide, what's up out there, West? But
they ain't doing bad.
Hey, listen, pimping ain't easy, but somebody's got to do it.
You know, that point's well taken. Worldwide West is a classic example. Stop getting these white boys that went to Wharton School of Business for sports and get some people who know the damn game to do something, please.
There you go.
I mean, he was long, dude. Good move by the Knicks, but you know, Wes is not in that, you know, location, you know, by being a chump. And again, he's always moved with stealth. You know, he's always moved on that kind of a level like that. He discloses where he be, moves where he be, and he just keeps it on the finesse tip, and that's called game. That's straight up game. You know,
Jerry, with you,
gentlemen. On this note, I have to come to a close with this because I want you to consider two subjects for our next show. Recently, we started the what if section regarding scenarios that possibly could have happened in the parallel universe, et cetera, et cetera. One of the subjects was, what if Jim Brown had come back when they told him to come back from Hollywood and not fuck Raquel Welch and 100 Rifles and all that other shit and stayed in the NFL?
Not necessarily in that order.
And we're also going to discuss what if gambling had been legal all along. I'm talking about all the way back to the Black Sox scandal, you know, with Pete Rose being the Hall of Fame, you know, with Art Schleese to be okay because he's a fucking inveterate gambler, but, you know, they don't care. So I want these things to be digested because we're going to discuss them both next week. But for now, I just want to recognize everybody. We've been here 9 years. March of 2012 is when I did the first show. I had the support of my brother T-Mac and my brother Gary. And I just want to say thank you to everybody because we're just going to do what we do and what we've been doing. We're going to keep on keeping on. And I want to thank everybody individually. Patrick, we've been friends now almost 30 years. I didn't realize it was that long. But you always provide great information, great insight. You're a great brother. And, of course, you're Tar. So we know what time it is. We say what we mean what we say. So, brother, thank you for everything you've done to make the show great. And please give us something to think about in the pot.
You know something? You know, I'm outside of my dad, who I adored and still do, I miss him every day. The person who first got my attention as a hero was Jackie Robinson, which is why I'm a Dodger fan today, this very day. I bleed Dodger blue. And when Jackie, you know, left the game and pushed out the idea of we need to have more guys, more players on the third baseline and coaches, I was able to because of the time period, to be able to morph into professional sports and in the front office, also in reporting. It's been great. But today, actually yesterday, what Jackie was really talking about happened yesterday. A guy named John Woods, he's an adjunct professor at Howard, has just made the deal, just signed the agreement between Major League Baseball and the Players Association of Baseball, and he will be assigned as the lead arbitrary of salaries in the Major League Baseball. That should be an accomplishment. That should be
sweet. Yes, indeed. We like that. Patrick, thank you
for
always throwing those little nuggets in the pot.
And Reg, he's a noob too.
No question.
Some things you can't hold against people.
Patrick, but having said that, let me hold
this against Snoop? Reggie. I thought you said Snoop.
Let me hold this against Reggie. Reggie, you've always been a civic-minded brother. I appreciate you. And, of course, I can't say ham sandwich anymore. I say Reggie. When I decide to make a ham, I'm going to make a Reggie. So you have endeared yourself into the lexicon of Soul Tree Radio and Raw and beyond. If you would, my brother, as I say thank you, give us something for the pack.
I think he's getting a ham sandwich.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
He
made
a
ham sandwich.
He took it to heart. He took it to heart. He's having a ham
sandwich. Well, while he's slapping the mustard.
Hey, stay out of that horseradish, Reg.
Exactly, man. While he's slapping the mustard on, Professor, as always, thank you. As you confessed to my daughter, you've been thinking about choking me out for the last 4 years, but that's all right. I love you anyway. Throw something in the pot and give us a plug for the Black College Sports Encyclopedia.
Okay. First of all, congratulations. I mean, that stability in any form of media, this is stability in any form of media, especially when you consider everybody is a slave to their sponsors and backers and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I give you credit. You haven't wilted at all. So all I can say with that is, you know, keep on keeping on, because, I mean, there's a lot more out there in front of you than there is out that's behind you already. So, you know, look for bigger and better things to come down the pipe. So that you, not only you can grow from this, so that we all can grow from this. It's beyond me how we have, you know, how we all came together, but at the same time, though, it's I call it divine intervention, because, you know, we really were not connected in any specific way. It just came together, and once we got together, we hit it off very well. So, you know, let us just keep on keeping on. I'm always love Gary, because he's Saluki, and they're not just our pet, they're our sister school. So, y'all can play this back for Reggie. It's basketball season now, and we winning. He gonna catch hell. put some Black history, Black college sports history under your Christmas tree. As a matter of fact, put some Black history. Tomorrow I have a meeting with a local history group that, and the meeting came about during the early part of the show tonight. So I'm not sure where all that's going. But, you know, my intent is, I mean, I've already written the book, so all I got to do is move them, and we can make some things happen. Because we got to tell our own story. And so far we have the Sports Encyclopedia with the history of Black college football, the history of Livingstone College, the history of Clapham University, all out there. And as soon as the printer delivers them, next week, we also have Bronco Pride, which is the history of Fayetteville State University's athletics and the athletic and the other history. And then we have the local books, Black College, Fayetteville Profile in Black, Volume 1 and Volume 2. That's now available. Limited, but it's available. Go to www.blackheritagereview.com. You can order all those books, and the wonderful Fayetteville State will be up in the next couple of days.
All right.
Mike, I put something very quick. Fred, what do you think about Dion taking that interview with the team out of Texas?
Texas Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's
something
to be expected.
We talked about at the beginning.
Now we'll find out just how committed he is to Jackson State and HBCU.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know,
it's a jump off.
I mean, you know, like I've said all along, he's not the first professional. He won't be the last, We've had them for years in football and basketball. We found out there was some of them were using HBCUs as stepping stones. Wink, wink. And we also found out some of them can coach. So, yeah. You know, because think about it. A lot of guys that are very good, Michael Jordan would be a sorry coach. Why?
No shit.
Because if he expects people to be as good as he was and to do it the way he did, you can't do it.
That's right.
And this is why most of your best coaches couldn't walk into bubblegum. You know, case in point. You know, I was talking to Coach. I was at Coach Gaines' house one day, and he was and his friend of mine was with me, and she was talking about, you know, you must have been a good ball. He said, hell, if I was picking a team, I'm the last nigga I'd pick. Coach Gaines was on the basketball team because he was 6'5" and could run a little. He could run pretty good, but the real reason was to help him keep his weight down and to keep him in shape and out of trouble.
There you go.
Basketball has not always been the plum sport with black people where it is now.
True. There you go. That's something to think about. And Eric, you've always given me a lot to think about. I love it when you get down metaphysically and run down stuff that takes it to such an nth degree that you come all the way back around to it and you realize the sense of it all. I want to thank you for your input and your insight. And thank you for helping us get around the 1500 and beyond. What's happening in the
brother? No, much appreciated. You know, never issue, and I don't mind helping you give family members a basketball contract neither, Mike. Hint. no problem, man. I mean, you know, glad to help, here to help. You know, we have a lot of collective information, but when you have a group of people who walk it like they talk it, you know, or who have the actual experience, that's pretty powerful in itself. And that kind of camaraderie and the way that we can build, chop it up and just share different information, it's always helpful, and it always lingers and it has impact, because again, this information is recorded, and people here may come in, do their part, move on with their lives, but there's other entities who document this information, cut and paste, or okay. Should it be of steal and boost? Cut and paste or steal or and boost? I think steal and boost would probably be what's taking place, but that's okay. That sounds about right. But that's okay too, in that relevant. But I also like the fact that not scared to approach, and correcting cats, if they're not maybe representing what the collective thinks. I can recall, just kind of overview real quick, when the Jackson State football coach was hired. And, there was all this celebrating and pot clanging about what's that going to mean to the HBCUs. And then there was this counter conversation about those who've attended HBCUs, right, and have a long family history there, where we weren't always looked at as being the toast of anything, right, and didn't really care because we could build and weren't the toast of anything. Now we're the toast of – now it's like this favorite appetizer. Hey, man, did you hear about this HBCU appetizer that's popping up all over television? Because there's a bandwidth there, And so these people came in there with their promotions and visions of sugar plums dancing in their effing heads and how they could pimp it and mac it. And who could be their little street bitch to get to sling their corner dope for marketing only to get promised. No, you never see a HBCU coach, who may have been credible, even accepting, doing a commercial with Lou Saban. But you're about the team. You're about the players. Interesting. Fascinating. So with all that being said, could you pull off, creating a situation for family members to have prominent positions under your guidance? You couldn't do that elsewhere. You cannot do that at a Power 5, but you could do it here. So you have a plan that becomes relevant, which is still okay, right? There's nothing wrong with having a plan. But the point was when that was broached from the very beginning, that this is not going to be a long tenure, that this is about this purpose, that this is about marketing. You're going to see this happen. You're going to see that happen. Oh, we got pushback, right?
Yeah.
Pushback. Oh, there we go. Every time a brother, and I'm like, whoa, whoa, whose pedigree are you speaking to, bro? Because, you know, we can go pound for pound all day, man. I feel really equipped, you know what I mean, to go however long we need to go based on experience and fact and documentation and historicals. So why am I saying all this? Because what happens here over the course of time on the initial level, which was not a common subject, always manifests itself to be the truth over time. And it doesn't have to be recognized. It doesn't have to be broadcasted because it's not. But truth is truth.
There you go.
Mike, one question to Eric. The proliferation of guys who I know reporting basketball are saying great things about UCLA, real, not real.
That's a good question. Okay. Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, I like that one. The Bruins, oh, man. You talk about your Dodgers, man. You know, you talk about the Bruins, right? Because there's one cat there. You know, anytime you mention the Bruins, you know, they got the great legacy. But from my own personal experience, where the Bruins are fond of, you know, and the guy that, you know, like I said, I mean, I could speak, you know, volumes of just incredible things about was Walt Hazard. You know, he was part of Wooden's first national championship team. And then he became a coach there. And, man, Walt Hazard, you know, I mean, I've got some, you know, really personal connectivities, things that, you know, he wanted to put me in a Bruin uniform, which is and he and his wife, which is another story altogether. But UCLA's got a good squad. You know, I mean, they're going to, you know, be pretty good. They've got a strong team. You know, they got a good coach. That cat from Cincinnati, I've always liked him as a coach, you know, because he coaches tough defense. Yeah, he's a little eyeball. He's a coach's kid, you know, but he's got the talent, you know. But, you know, but the thing is, I can glean through the bullshit and just kind of see his X and O capability because, you know, in the prep level, right, usually the best coaches anywhere are at the prep level. Most people don't know that. The high school coaches are typically your best coaches, right? They just stay in high school. They don't move on. And so when you have these coaches, when you look at it from that perspective, as if you look at that dude as a high school coach, now he's a collegiate coach, right? Sometimes this coach is putting you to fucking town, and he's a damn math teacher. You know what I mean? He's teaching physics, but who happens to coach the basketball team, and he's got no one over 6'1", can't run shit, and all of a sudden, man, you're in the battle of your life, and you got more talent. Why? Dude can coach. He's one of them type of cats, right? He doesn't fit the grid optically. He doesn't fit the grid anywhere else. He's an over-intense dude, but he puts up a lot of wins and numbers, right, because he's a coach's son. But so they'll have coaching is my point. You know, they're going to get good coaching from this dude. They've got the talent. It's tough to, you know, make another final four run. But, yeah, I think the prognosis early, they are as legit as anything else in college basketball. Gonzaga's right there with them. But, yeah, UCLA's a tough team.
All right. Having said that, Reggie, you finish your sandwich yet? Okay. Go ahead. They're just going to be farting out here on the radio because that sound picks up. Gary, throw something in the pot. And, brother, you know I love you and I love Ma Grace and thank you. The last couple of years I know have been rough, but we've been always here for each other. I'm proud of the fact that you've done over 1,100 shows on your own. And thank you for always coming in so that I can say the bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Gray. Throw something in the pot, G.
Yes, sir. First of all, I want to congratulate you on your 1,500. And it wouldn't have been right without you doing it. I wouldn't be here either. Now, saying that, this is a girl, Naomi Osaka, is in the news again. She expressed concern with the Chinese tennis player, Feng Shui.
Right.
Feng Shui is the number 2 tennis player in China.
Right.
Feng Shui, disappeared 2 months ago. Things Ray disappeared. Why did he disappear? Because he wrote an article about being sexually abused by a Beijing government official.
Oh, shit.
He's going to disappear.
He had not been seen. He had not been seen since the middle of summer. So Naomi Osaka said, wait a minute, what's going on here? Now, the WTA chairman is also getting involved in this. So the Chinese government response is,
Saturday, the Great Upper Coast back in effect, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. on the Pacific Coast. Thank you, G. Tony, what can I say, bro? I love you. Been through a lot together and stuff like that. You help keep this thing going. So you get the last rip throwing shit in the pot.
You're just saying that because it's true. By the way, about 18 minutes ago in the second half, UCLA is nipping Long Beach State 66-36. So,
nipping deep.
Non-conference. Gotta love the non-conference early season schedules.
Yeah, it is. It's always interesting. Yeah.
Is that John Thompson's Georgetown team playing St. Leo?
Actually, they call themselves now St. Leo Gorsi to the bottom.
Yeah, I mean that Georgetown preseason schedule. My goodness.
They played my school, Southern Connecticut, one year. Speaking of basketball and women's sports, the NCAA has announced that now the women's tournament will have their play-in games now. Coming.
Oh, 96 teams? Okay.
Yeah.
96 teams now,
yeah. So their tournament's going to go on forever now, too. Now, will they get the same venues as the men? Well, you know.
No.
Hold on there, Baba Louie. We're not going that far. We'll give you four more games.
Right.
That's about all. But the thing that I find again interesting, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the Cy Young Award was brought out today, and congratulations to Robbie Ray and Tyler Barnes. It's interesting. The 120 game winner in all of baseball, I don't even think got a first place vote. If you go by the land of the law in analytics, Cy Young couldn't even win his own damn award.
That speaks
volumes to what analytics has become now. And by the way, I misspoke. It was that basketball juggernaut North Florida that UCLA is playing. I think.
Mm. Oh, North Florida. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
North Florida.
Tony, how come you could fire a manager with the Mets and the Yankees bring him up as a coach? Well, why is that?
I was like, you gotta be kidding me.
Where the hell is? I mean, all I want to know is where the hell is Felix Mian when you need him?
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
And
there you go.
I'd like to, and in that same vein, I'd like to put a half a bat to Noah Syndergaard, who probably be more brains in his head, you know, up on the back than it would be in his damn head. But that's another story.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, the former Mets manager, he's just trying to get another job. You know, no big thing. No big thing.
Is that Bob Astromani?
No. More like Kenny Singleton
George Bamberger.
Gary, I'm gonna do a betting place. I'm gonna do a trading places bet with you with Noah Syndergaard. He's not gonna do a hundred innings this year for the Angels.
Ooh, a prop bet.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
Is that good to me? And that is weird because Angels got three pitchers that are just almost like that, and they won't get through April before they break it down.
All I'll say is the price of mediocrity just went up even more so with him going to Disney, because
I think
the thing with him at the end of the day, it's more mental than physical.
Will Mike Trout ever be on a playoff team? The alleged base player, they've never been on a playoff team. Mike, I got to do a clarification on something that Patrick says, because we have a younger audience. When Patrick mentioned that Staples Center is going to be called the Crypto Arena, it's cryptocurrency, LA, not Crips. No crypto. Cryptocurrency, Los Angeles. Now the Crips can no longer one up the red labeled Bloods with Staples.
That's right.
Because now it means crypto. Currency, City of Angels. And so if you hear Ice-T say colors, it's just a meme.
Well, no doubt all the chairs in the stadium will be blue, but that's a too big conversation.
Cryptocurrency, people.
Again, I thank you for everything. We'll be on the case when we do show 1501. But for now, again, thanks, everybody. Much love. And I'm going to let Mr. J. Billington Bulworth take it.
Honorable Senator from the state of California, the Senator J. Billington Bulworth.
Hey, nice little piece of timing.
Amen.
Senator, teacher.
Amen.
Bulworth.
We stand at the doorstep of a new millennium. Our obligation is to reduce
this, put a little time in on this,
and at the same time restore its creative power. To reinvigorate our society and bring about a rebirth of democracy. Any questions?
Nice.
Good evening.
Yes. Less is more.
When the riots and civil unrest went down about 4 years ago, you promised us federal funding to rebuild our community. What happened?
Well, what happened was that we all knew that was going to be big news for a while, so we all came down here, Bush, Clinton, Wilson, all of us. We got our pictures taken, told you what you wanted to hear, and we pretty much forgot about it.
Did he just say what I think he said?
Let's see where he's going with this.
We can't get insurance down here. We can't get health insurance, fire insurance, life insurance. Why haven't you come out for Senate Bill 2720?
Well, because you haven't really contributed any money to my campaign, have you? You got any idea how much these insurance companies come up with? They pretty much depend on me to get a bill like that and bottle it up in my committee during an election, And in that way, we can kill it when you're not looking.
Fred, when you say buy the book, what book would that be?
The Democratic Party don't care about the African-American community.
Isn't that obvious? Hey, you got half of your kids out of work and the other half are in jail. Do you see any Democrat doing anything about it? Certainly not me. So what are you going to do, vote Republican? Come on, come on. You're not going to vote Republican. Let's call a spade a spade. I mean, come on. You can have a billion-man march. If you don't put down that malt liquor and chicken wings and get behind somebody other than a running back who stabs his wife, you're never going to get rid of somebody like me.
Right this way, Senator. Right this way.
What are you doing? I don't get it.
That was good. That was really good.